Yeah, I know. Welcome to this evening's Monroe City Council meeting for February 12, 2013. At this time, I'd like to call the meeting to order. And also ask that the meeting take roll call, please.
Councilperson Gary.
Here.
Cutabat.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
Camp.
Present.
Davis.
Present.
Campbell.
Here.
Hanford.
Present.
And student representative Perron.
Present.
All right, please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. This portion of the meeting is set aside for comments from citizens. This time is opportunity for citizens to speak to City Council on any issue except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. We please ask that you limit your time to 5 minutes, and also we'd appreciate your name and address for the record. First is Angus Snapka.
Yes, got it right. People mispronounce either the Angus or the Snapka. I live at 421 South Lewis Street, which I ordinarily do. We had a fire a few months ago and we're in a rental. I have a concern about Jeff Rasmussen's, non-renewal, I suppose is the phrase, on the Parks Board. I did read the portions of the letter from Mr. Zimmerman, and it just seems as though the process for deciding who's going to be on the board ought to be, a little more democratic. I understand that there was a disagreement about the wakeboard part, but I thought that Jeff would handle himself very well. He was very polite and respectful, and he brought things about through the democratic process. And it didn't seem a subversive thing. And it just seems to me that differing opinions ought to be heard. There's really not much point in having a large board of people if everyone has the same opinion. And I know that Jeff has worked very hard for no money for the Parks District. And I don't know, I'm a citizen, I like to get things for free. So I'm just kind of hoping that perhaps you'll reconsider.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Anique Bennett. I'm the director of the Monroe Chamber of Commerce. I'm at 108 East Main Street, number 206. Good evening, and thank you so much to so many of you for coming to our lunch today, and Jeff Sachs for giving us a great update. This evening, I want to be here to express support for the music festival proposal that's coming before you tonight. This is such an exciting opportunity in so many ways for us. Communities, are built on experiences and system-wide opportunities for everybody to kind of connect. And this particular event gives us an opportunity to generate funds for a band shell, I guess we just call it a band shell, improvement out there at Lake Ty that would give us ongoing community experiences for years to come. I think this is a great idea and investment in the community. The idea of Dare to Dream, Follow Your Dream is committed to focus around community. And I think for us, what I see here in Monroe is we are all driving to focus on the system as a whole, not just pieces and parts. And this is a really important way to express that. Doug and Tracy Hobbs, the High Road Promotions, a lot of, to the untrained eye, to the many, are the Speedway on county property. And they're not, they're small Monroe business. They're here, they're home, they are the essence of a lot of hometown experience. Working with Doug and Tracy, with the city, with the Chamber of Business, is the perfect intersection for us to come together and work on this lasting legacy at Lake Tide. I urge you to consider this proposal and all of the ways that it can benefit the community, especially getting lift off on that community-wide message of promoting Monroe as a whole. And so, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't have anybody else signed up at this time, but as always, we'd like to open up to members of the audience to address council. Just ask for your name and address for the record.
Good evening. Jeff Rasmussen, 16655 150 Street, Southeast. 7 years ago, my wife and I bought our house here in Monroe. One of the big reasons we came to Monroe was the abundance of open space and park systems that the city has. It's a phenomenal place, and we have a phenomenal parks department. Even through the tough times, our parks are immaculately kept. Compared to other cities that I see, I've visited, I feel our parks are top-notch. I've always felt that our community's parks are have the potential for being a catalyst for bringing people into a community. Recently, we were hearing about the music festival. That's a great example. And I feel that there's always been potential within our parks for stuff like that. I also know that when funds in a community get very tight, a lot of times it's the parks that gets looked at very heavily. And unfortunately, sometimes it's the parks that suffer. And those are the main reasons why in June 2011 I jumped on the opportunity to apply and eventually, thanks to Mr. Mayor, get appointed to the Parks Board. I was thrilled and privileged to be a part of the Parks Board. Since I was appointed, a lot had happened during that tenure. We all know about the wakeboarding park. And the board's review of that and being involved in there. What you probably aren't aware of is a lot of the other work that's been done on the board. A couple of highlights I'm going to throw at you guys is after several reviews of the wakeboarding park, as a board, I brought to the board that I wanted to improve communication between our board and city council and look at our responsibilities as board members as well as the direction with council. And so I started with the support of the board bringing forth a plan to review the responsibilities of board members and see if there's opportunities for improvement there. After gathering several other communities' parks board responsibilities, I felt that ours were very much on par with everyone else. And so it was then developing a strategy to keep those open communication lines between city, council, and parks board. Those of you that we've had the chances to meet, you know I'm all about open communication. And so it would make sense that that's the route we would go. That was started in April. And as of last month, it's still an ongoing project. Most recently, in December, I, along with the rest of the board, supported a concept proposal for the skate park at Lake Tai. As a board, we're also very emphatic about the idea of the music festival and bringing that forth to council. Last month, I was privileged enough to be nominated and elected to chair the board, which I was very, very happy and thrilled to take on. Unfortunately, I was very disappointed on Friday to receive a letter stating that I would not be reappointed to the board. The letter did come from the mayor, as that is part of his position to appoint and reappoint. The letter cited difference in vision between the council, me, and the mayor. And I guess my concern why I am up here is to express my disappointment because of all the work that we've done, and I've had the privilege of working with the Parks Board to do. But then also to really address the fact that my vision that I laid out when I joined the Parks Board has not changed and never changed throughout my participation of the Parks Board. Looking at the minutes, it was right online. And so it is discouraging and it is disappointing that this was the end result. I apologize, I know I'm over my time, but if I can just have another moment to finish. I'm still, as I said, very disappointed. A little bit of shock, considering my personal opinion of the wakeboarding park. I suspect and I have a feeling that may have had some effect and some decision making into this, which bothers me because that was my personal view, and I feel that my community, my professional position within the board was mixed with my personal view, even though my vision is the same. So certainly I would love to be a part of the Parks Board. I think any board member, and Mr. Farrell would probably tell you, 2013 was going to be a banner year for our group. And it still is. The excitement that we showcased in last month and laid out for the year was just phenomenal. I've never seen our group so excited. I'm very disappointed that, as it appears, I'm not going to be part of it as far as board members. As I've stated in an email to the Parks Board, letting them know that this decision was made, I'm committed to serving my community in whatever shape or form that is, and I will continue to do that. Certainly, I would love to continue as I was with the Parks Board, but regardless, it will continue. I do feel that the decision that was made was made as one person, as it always is, respectfully. And I do mean that, sir. But I would encourage council to take a look at the process and see if there's another way to open up the communication when it comes to appointments and reappointments of our boards. There's a lot that's on one person's shoulders, and no matter who is in the position, it is a big decision to make. Our boards and our commissions are a valuable tool to our city and to you as council. And I feel that as council, there should be more open communication with that. And so I would ask that you do have a conversation amongst council to see if there is alternatives or another process that you can implement to take down that road. In the end, Mr. Mayor, council, I do certainly appreciate the time that I had on board. I certainly wish I could continue. But as I said, I'm committed to serving this community. This is the community that I call home. And however I can, I certainly will do that. Thank you.
Thank you for your service.
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to address council at this time? Okay, all right. We'll move on then to an announcement, or in this case, a presentation or a proclamation. And you may or may not be aware, but February 17th through the 23rd is National Engineers Week. And so with the one engineer and one graduate with an engineering degree who are here this evening, I'd like to provide the following proclamation in recognition of their hard work. National Engineers Week. Whereas engineers have used their scientific and technical knowledge and skills in creative and innovative ways to fulfill society's needs, and whereas engineers face the major technological challenges of our time, from rebuilding towns devastated by natural disasters to designing an information superhighway that will take our country to the 21st century, and whereas engineers are encouraging our youth, young math and science students to realize the practical power of their knowledge, and whereas we will look more than ever to engineers and their knowledge and skills to meet the challenges of the future, now therefore I do hereby proclaim February 17th through the 23rd of 2013 as National Engineers Week in the city of Monroe. Again, thank you to our two, one engineer and one graduate degree engineer. Brad, you do a lot of work, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, moving on now to the consent agenda. Councilmember Gearing.
Motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
A motion has been made by Councilmember Gearing and seconded by Councilmember Hanford to approve the consent agenda. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. We do have a final action item here this evening. Very glad to have some very distinguished, I'll call it distinguished individuals. Because it's true, here joining us this evening. I will have Mike Durrell introduce them if he would, but this is an action item that is back to you as a result of our earlier conversation related to the guitars and the stars of the music festival later this year. Mike, you've got some information to go with us.
Sure do. Thank you, Mayor. So I've handed out to all of you a budget breakdown as you requested, breaking out what cost estimates and revenue estimates we expect for this event that we're proposing. I want to move to quickly just just point out folks that that are part of this core committee that we're anxious to take that next step and meet up and continue to refine and really get this something like this to happen this year, and invite others in the community to share their interests, their time, their treasure, their talents to join us. As Anika so rightly put it earlier, this really is something that can bring our community together. So Diane and Jeff are both sitting up front with me. They're key members and staff members as far as this helping to put this together, obviously financially, economic development, and that. I want to introduce Mr. Keith Brock here. He is our local musician that came up with the idea, the seed for this, and he'll be speaking to you after I'm done and giving you just sharing his vision with you and be able to answer questions you may have for him. But I also want to point out Mr. Doug Hobbs, who again has been introduced earlier, runs the Speedway, the High Road Productions, and Anique Bennett, Executive Director of the Chamber of Commerce. So there's some of our core of the committee, and we're just anxious to take the next steps. I want to talk just a little bit just about the kind of little long range down the road. We talked about band shell, like I mentioned, with the goals schools a few weeks back about how exciting something like this could plant those seeds, get a fund established for that, and that's something that the community has long desired, is to have some formal permanent structure that's suitably sized for the park. And I also have there before you a copy of a letter of support from David Paolo. He's with the Tarnished Brass Quartet. He's done lots of work around with the Mineral Arts Council, the school district, in the community, supporting music and performing arts. And they're on board. I spoke with the Mineral Arts Council. They're on board. They're going to bring a letter as well. Lastly, Productions, the folks that have been doing Shakespeare at the Park, they're excited about that concept as well. So I just wanted to share that with you, is that there's a lot of community support for the concept of doing something like that. And, you know, that leads to, you know, these folks will be at the table when we have our public workshops and our park plan update to make sure that something like this can be worked out. And, you know, it may be, we know that Lake Tide Park has a lot of developed features, and it may be a matter of changing some of those features to suit, you know, what has actually been occurring at the park, and what we'd like to see occur at the park. And one of the features that we'll be discussing in the park plan update is either altering or moving a ball field at Lake Tide, and for something like this. And that's just part of the plan. You know, we have a large park plan update. It's comprehensive, our whole system. And as you know, we've spoken earlier about us supporting the school district in developing three ball fields there, and we've, you know, helped with a grant, got some seed money, and we would like to further that through that park plan update to seek ways of exploring where the city can support financially the development of fields there at the high school. So we can address this, since there isn't like a loss of, say, the ball field at Lake Tide. So really, coming back to this neat festival, as I kind of mentioned, got a break out there, and Diane and I went over this as far as the revenues, and then Keith and I with the festival costs, because I am not a musician. I learned what a backline is in the last few weeks here, so. But don't ask me what that is. So really, the bottom line is we're conservative on the revenue estimates, and we're also revising upward on being conservative with the costs too. So, you know, revising upward on that. And you can see that what we've got at this point is a pretty good breakout. So getting back to, you know, seeking the budget authority to utilize contingency fund to a max of $3,000. At this point, we don't expect to seek that amount. That would be offset anyways by revenues. So with that, I think I'm going to turn it over to Keith, where he can share his vision for the event, and then we can answer any questions you may have.
If you like, you can sit there if you like, or you can...
I'm used to standing, so okay. Performing.
Yeah.
So, voila. Thank you very much, the council and the whole city of Monroe. What a unique and exciting opportunity this is for me, because as a child, I used to walk right out here on Main Street. I started at the Monroe Christian School down here, and I often wonder where my life would take me. And so to be able to come back and pull full circle right now and come and be here today to have a chance to help this community, which very much helped me all the way through my young years and guidance, not only families in this community, but also the businesses in this community, which helped me to survive and give me hope for what later in life I would come to do. So it's nice to be in this position and to have a chance to bring this here to Monroe, and very excited about it. So I know we're talking about financial things, and we'll, of course, open that up here in a second to ask me any things that you would like about the costs and stuff. Very glad to see that, you know, we're keeping this well under the budget so far, which is always good, right? So, but the main, you know, the main thing I would like to bring to the table here is not only a concert, but, you know, a message to everybody, you know, and also a thank you to the community and the families here that helped me to achieve my goals, but bringing that message back full circle to the newer generations who have started and developed here while I was away, and to bring back that same message of hope and inspiration to all of the people of the town today. You know, I started from a very meager beginning, you know, here, and wondered, you know, at the time how I would develop from living in a little tent at the front of the property where my dad had purchased and had logged in, and I thought, wow, this isn't how most people live, you know. So I aspired to, you know, well, there's got to be better things out there, and through education, through the help of the community, you know, saw that was definitely true. A lot of the businesses helped me in this town. I moved out when I was about 15 and rented a little farm just outside of town, or a little trailer on a farm. Went to school and worked three jobs here in town. One was at Wolf Kills, one was at the Red Barn, and one was at Dairy Queen to make ends meet, to get rent, and then also pursue at the same time the music, which I was so inspired by. And the school system here was a major proponent of that for me. The teachers that were here at the time, even though I came from a kind of a broke-up home situation, were very inspirational to me, to keep me on track, you know, to learn, even though some of my grades didn't reflect that, the thought remained, you know, instilled in my heart and my mind that you know, to keep and persevere for the future and to succeed. So those teachers helped inspire me, you know, on all those things. So very much throughout my entire career, I've always looked back on where I started from here and where I came from, and how that very beginning gave me the foundation, the concrete foundation that I needed, because in this industry, it's a very unforgiving industry. It's entertainment is not something that a lot of people succeed at. So, you know, it gave me that drive and that fortitude to make it in a very tough industry. So, coming back, you know, I want to bring that message to the stage, and not only, you know, what my words are to the audience and whatnot, but also in the band that I'm bringing, being the way that we're going to perform this concert is without any rehearsals whatsoever. And that is to take a group of people and show the audience, you know, that even though we are professionals of what we do, that, you know, working together, listening to each other, you know, you can instantly build something very magical very quickly, you know, that's very inspiring and very moving, you know. And it's that kind of thing that I believe that this town represents and is the future of what people are thinking around here, or definitely should be. And I definitely think that the people of this area are the type that that want to go in that positive type of direction too. And sometimes we all just need a little bit of inspiration, especially in tough times, to remind us that that stay on the positive track and good things will come. So that's kind of my message that in the concert, and the way that I have set it up with the musicians that I'm bringing, and our concept for the show. So that's our message, and yeah.
Keith, do me a favor if you would, because we've had an opportunity to talk, and I think you're not just a story of how you began to pursue the career that you've had, but the career that you've had is quite amazing as well. Tell us a little bit about what it is that you're not only just, I don't like that word just, you're not only a musician, but you do much more than play an instrument.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about what you've done and the career that you've had.
Yeah. You know, I've been blessed in many ways. I'm one that likes to take and see opportunity and expand upon it. And so, just besides being a musician, a guitar player, vocalist, a keyboard player, I also produce. I engineer. I have my own studio in LA, I get to interact with a lot of different artists from, very different angles, and not just artists, but a lot of different venues and stuff. Over the years, I've had a chance to work for several years at Disneyland and with Disney, and then a lot in Las Vegas for most of the major casinos, from Caesar's Palace, MGM, New York, Monte Carlo, the Venetian, Mandalay Bay. Performed many years out there, continuing on down through my career. I had the apprenticeship under Hans Zimmer, who's a very famous film composer. Worked with him over Media Ventures and sound design, composing for pictures such as The Lion King, League of Their Own, The Gladiator. I've been involved in film and TV stuff, and then over the years had the chance to work with artists such as Gwen Stefani, Manhattan Transfer. A favorite of mine is I've got to perform four shows at the Playboy Mansion. Unique affiliation with them, and my career has taken me as far away as Beijing, China, to perform for Dick Cheney, a former vice president, and meet him and Secretary of State James Baker, and did a private event for them. Performed a lot of private events over the years for a lot of movie stars, Clint Eastwood, Forrest Whitaker, Tim Allen, Jenny McCarthy, Shannon Elizabeth. I've had those opportunities as well. And so my career and experiences have taken me all over the place and in many varied situations. It's been great. At the time when I was a kid, walking down Main Street here, and like I said, always wondering where life would take me. It's taken me a long way indeed. And once again, nice to come full circle, back here.
Council, any questions for Keith?
I didn't magically turn on. That's kind of crazy how that happened, I guess. I don't know if I did enough. September, the month of September, as soon as possible. The first thing I think of is weather. I'm like, hey, let's do it sooner than September. I'm assuming it just probably is going to take a while to get everything organized. Just maybe a little bit of thinking behind September rather than it just feels like August has better weather. But I'm sure there's a plan behind that. Yeah. I'm just curious as to what it is.
Yeah, we discussed that in relation to the fairgrounds. Being done with that, okay. And not interfering with that, sure. And being a good neighbor, and then also with the weather, as you brought up, rightfully so. And so, August, September are pretty good months weather-wise. So that's why I want to capture that early part of September.
Okay.
I think it's the second Saturday is what we're keying in on. So
right after the fair, essentially,
after the Labor Day weekend, okay. Be the following weekend, on a Saturday or one day.
Now, really excited about it, and appreciate the story and in the background, some of the names that were bantered about previously at the last meeting were pretty exciting. I know is it John Hopper from Blues Travelers lives around here.
Yes.
Big fan of that. So that'd be really cool. Something like that, you know, here in town would be really looking forward to it.
I just got a text from him. He's in Florida right now, yeah. But and then coming to LA, and then he'll be up here next week. So he's actually a neighbor of mine up here, and he said, yeah, let's get this happening. Just, you know, these guys get booked out for months and months out in advance. You know, they get on a big tour, and of course, you know, then it's very hard to get those people for those things. So, you know, his response was, the sooner we can, you know, get it on the books, you know, then that helps to get his involvement, you know, on that.
Yeah.
And that, you know, definitely is true of the rest of the people that I'm looking at, too. I know Jimmy Paxson, the drummer for Stevie Nicks, he's been out on the road with her this last year. And now Fleetwood Mac is touring, so... that's kind of great news for me because it will be off. So, it'll, you know, Mick Fleetwood plays drums for Fleetwood Mac. So that helps me solidify, you know, him. But, you know, for all those guys, you know, the sooner, you know, I know I relayed this information to these guys as well, but, you know, we definitely... Weather's paramount, but also, you know, allowing enough time to solidify, you know, get a green light, and then solidify, you know, the band, you know, it's just great. So
excellent. And Mike, I appreciate the numbers. I was comfortable moving before last. So this is great though, and coming in at least your first guess at it is well under the 50 that you were looking for authority for. So I think that's.
Thank you. And I might just add counsel as well as, you know, Doug here. He's taking a look at this, and he's part of it. And we were just kind of whispering before the meeting, and there's so many more opportunities. And moving forward, we're going to be able to even reduce the costs and just find ways of doing things. So it's pretty exciting. That's this ball is rolling now. So.
Indeed. No, I appreciate the concept that... Jeff Sachs had used previously with the EB5, the bucket. You're asking for a bucket, and you know, for $36,500, whether or not you actually spend it or not, actually $50,000, whether or not you actually spend it. To me, that's a great visual for what you're asking for. So, again, I made the motion last time. I'm going to do it again. I move to authorize budgetary authority for up to $50,000 for the 2013 Music Festival event.
Second.
Okay, thank you. Motion's been made by Councilman Gary, seconded by Councilmember Camber to authorize budgetary authority up to $50,000 for the 2013 Musical Festival event. I'm just going to inject this in here because it was funny. We were talking, and my wife and I had an opportunity. We met in the Safeway of all places, and as we left, she goes, "Doc, I wish I would have asked if you knew Richie Sambora." So I called up Gene real quick, and the answer was. You didn't know him.
So
my wife was like, okay, I'm for this. Somebody who knows him is for it. Very good. City Administrator Brazel.
Thank you. I know we have a motion on the floor, and you spoke about your music side of things. Would you be able to give council kind of a brief outline real quick on the events that you've put on, the owner of Qualcomm Stadium, the wedding events and those types of things, maybe the NAMM show, just so they can get that view too.
Yeah. I mean, more events. You know, that I've been involved with over the years. Like I say, a lot of private parties, and being located in LA. I mean, they've been involved. You know, even Captain of Industries the CEO of Qualcomm and Paul Jacobs. Doing his 40th birthday party, which was. Quite extravagant, to say the least. I was out in Las Vegas, and the NAMM show Gene mentioned is the largest music retailer show in the world, and basically it's just where the manufacturers come out and demonstrate their new products and everything, and the very best engineers, producers, musicians in the world are brought to this event every year to, you know, showcase all of the new items. I've been involved on producing the show's largest acoustic show, with Saga and Shove Instruments, over the last 7 years, and that's always a big event and an honor to be involved with. Because, as I say, once again, you know, when you're in a group of peers that have dedicated their entire lives to, the music industry and whatnot, it's just a prestigious place to be for us at that time. That's another event. Going back to the earlier beginning to many weddings and things over the earlier years. So,
yeah. Needless to say, you've had your hand in a lot of different scenarios and situations. Many of them probably much broader and grander than what we're looking at here at Monroe, and some maybe smaller. But what's your experience in helping to produce or put on an event such as this is quite extensive.
Yeah, the thing I think that is going to be a real special part of this is just like I say, the message and that's, you know, I mean, it goes beyond just the music aspect of things and the concert. You know, you go to a lot of concerts, a lot of shows, but this is unique because it's geared and manufactured to promote this community and to thank them, to inspire them all at the same time. You usually don't, when a band is going town to town, it sometimes becomes difficult to remember where you're at with a different show every night, and you're like, where are we? I think we're in Toledo, but no, we're in Detroit, right? The other, where are we? Monroe is the focal point of this show, and we definitely hope that it propels. And the intent is to be an outrageous success, to generate the revenue, to generate the interest, to propel this forward, because absolutely, as we all know, entertainment, especially I think out here, is a big thing for people. Music is something that I pretty much guarantee almost every household has an interest in, and so to have a venue in the future and a place to go and do this for this city is going to be a fabulous thing, without a doubt.
Keith, I'll tell you what, I'll have you take a seat again here, because I think there's a couple questions, maybe not just for you, but for Mike and others as well. So but I appreciate the introduction and
yes.
Allowing the council to know you in this way. So, Councilmember Petterman?
Mr. Brock, thank you for coming tonight and sharing your story. It's always nice to hear, a Monroe resident achieving their dreams, so thanks for coming. Most of my questions are to staff, so I've got a couple of questions. Diane, can you remind me how much is in the contingency fund right now?
It's about $500,000.
Okay.
Available.
Okay.
There's more than that, but it's already earmarked.
Okay. But that's not what's available. It's not what's earmarked. Okay. And then, Jeff, you had mentioned before when this had come up that you were pretty sure we were going to get some sponsors and that you would get headway on that. Any inkling of sponsorship? I see on the budget it's $10,000. Do you have any update for us?
I feel comfortable we're going to achieve the sponsorships. It's awful hard to sell a sponsorship to something that doesn't exist.
Okay.
So,
but you have interest. You had expressed that there was an interested party.
Yes, I do think there's an interest in the sponsorship side of it.
Okay.
And I think that will come.
Okay, thank you. It looks like the charge, if I'm doing my math right, which I might not be, 2,500 people, about 45,000, so maybe a
$20 tickets.
20?
And then that somebody took 10% off as far as a ticket fee.
Okay.
But just by example, I think it's called Brown Paper Bag or something, if we went that route, that's an online thing. They build the fees into the cost of the tickets,
okay. So
there actually wouldn't be that. But I know that there's we have some options to look at as far as ticketing and promotions.
Okay.
I can address that a little bit.
Sure.
We also use we've used brown paper tickets as a tap in the past. We've also high road promotions. We've also done Olympic events and sports festivals and scat and music festivals. Been tied into entertainment for a long time. Also working with radio stations, TV stations to produce, you know, so we can probably lend a lot of the back things as far as helping with sponsorships. Ticketing, we use an e-tix, which we could just do it at our cost too, and it would save, you know, over these fees. So I think this is a great idea. We, you know, obviously we're a small business this town, but we'd like to be a part of it. We're on the county, but we're still the city. That's the way we look at it. So we have a lot of city and businesses on partnering up with us this year, but I think that we can bring a lot to the table per se with tying in radio stations and getting some sponsorships. And I think, you know, Jeff is right. I think there's some sponsors out there that would really see this as a first time venue that they'd like to get behind. Hopefully, it'll be something that Keith can, you know, do annually here and really, you know, make this thing explode.
I've heard a lot about you, and people seem pretty excited that you're involved. So,
Patsy, if
yeah.
I can elaborate
sure.
a little too, is Doug shared with me that the fairgrounds and High Road, they have a substantial buying power when they go out to media buys, and we would be able to work with them to get their buying strength. So, if we go out to radio and to advertise, we'll be able to purchase ad space for a much reduced rate than if we were to just go out and do it on our own.
Okay. Well, that is one of my questions, because I see printing and marketing, or advertising marketing, 3,000.
And again, that, estimates are high estimates.
Me, that doesn't seem like a lot.
Yeah, right.
So I look at that and go, is that reasonable? If we want to have a wide reach and attract, I think, 2,500 people, you know, is $3,000 enough for advertising? So I guess, Doug, that would be my question maybe to you or Mike or...
I can answer that, but I think Andy wants to say something first.
Well, and I do want to just interject that the city has chosen to invest lodging tax funds with the Monroe Chamber in order to produce the new ChooseMonroe.com website, which is a very powerful tool. And one of the purposes of the website is to give great promotional exposure to events just like this. It's one of the reasons I'm so excited about this. This is an opportunity for this website to come into action. This website is going to be connected to the visitor tab on the city site. It has a mobile application. It has all sorts of bells and whistles on it. It was designed by someone who's worked with the Napa Sonoma Hotel and Winery Association, the York County Convention Center. This is a professionally produced website for us, and so we will be optimizing that. We are already working with you on that, on this tool. So I want to just put that out there. This could be a nice way to also be able to be benefiting from that investment.
Okay.
And on the marketing side of it, it is a low ad budget, but I think that, you know, based on what the chamber's doing, what the city's doing, and if we get the right, especially radio partner behind this, we can get a lot of leverage.
Okay.
Based on, and get a lot of added value. The one thing that Jeff mentioned, we have a pretty large advertising budget for just our track and our promotional event. But we also place all the advertising and marketing and media for the fair. So that lets us have two different, you know, pots, so to speak. They're completely separate. One's county and one's up. That gives us a lot of strength. So we do have a lot of radio and TV that gives us a lot of free things, or they will do added value. And we would use this to help drive this event.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. One question that's come up in the community, I think this is very important for the community, is there going to be a beer garden?
Yes, the plan, the beer and wine.
Yeah.
Right.
People are supposed to laugh a little bit. You talk about a festival, and in my mind that means a multi-day kind of situation. Is this just one day?
Yeah, it's an afternoon evening.
Okay, so it's
1 to 2 opening bands, and then the headline band.
Okay.
So it'd be something, yeah, like mid-afternoon till dusk.
And then there was talk of it kind of dovetailing into things around the community at restaurants and things. I think there could be some marketing advantage to having things occur. I mean, you have brought that up before, and I think that was a great idea to have something the night before or another. So is businesses, the restaurants in town and others, has this been kind of broached to them, and is there interest in that?
To a certain degree, I think we'll be opening up the festival to a lot of the local restaurants to provide, you know, a booth or a concession at the same time. I think it would be a great idea to go out to particularly the nightclubs in town that have music venues to get them on board, and perhaps they have a special, attraction that they can bring the folks downtown after the concert.
Okay, and my last question is, Councilmember Gearing brought up weather, which usually September is really nice here. I mean, that usually is but what if that day the weather is horrible? Do we have kind of a plan B? Anyone can answer.
Yeah, we discussed in one of our early, get-togethers about the possibility that we could have Plan A is Saturday, and Plan B is where you wouldn't have to, you could postpone it to Sunday, but we would have to work within that one weekend. So that's something that we're going to map out.
Okay, just curious, because I know, a lot of an outdoor festival event, if you've got great weather, beautiful. If you don't, it will impact sales, ticket sales. People might not come, and, just having that thought process of what the Plan B would be.
Or we could just have a true mush pit.
Mush pit, thanks.
Thank you for all of your work, all of you who are involved in this. It's very exciting. I was absent out of town the last meeting this was talked about, but reading up on him, very exciting. I'm liking everything that I see, and most of the questions were covered. The one question I had was, I didn't see any in the budget for stage and the weatherproofing. I know, for concerts you gotta have some kind of cover just in case it rains so that your equipment doesn't get wet and ruined. So how is that just built into the sound and lighting, or?
Yeah, the stage actually below, we own the city or parks. We own stage pieces, 4-bay, the typical stuff. So we'll construct that. And as far as what's that?
Some kind of covering.
Yeah, well, it's going to be on that west-facing side of the building, so there'll be some cover there under the existing of the building. But yeah, it's something definitely we can work on.
We plan on using the awning there as the backdrop to the stage, so there is some protection.
Sure.
We have the same valid concerns, about weather and its tendencies to rain when we don't want it to. we are also talking about the spillover possibility that if there was a downpour on Saturday, then could we shift it to Sunday? That will be something. Continue to develop and to talk about.
The other, just to clarify, so we'll have a beer garden, but there'll be a certain area that the alcohol has to stay in. Is that correct? So there won't just be roaming around alcohol.
There'll be a portion of the of the area inside.
Okay. The beer garden aspect would be the chamber participation to a large degree, right? And Nick has done a lot of events with that. She's very diligent when it comes to that type of activity.
Second, in favor of $50,000 request.
I'll just amend the motion, make it $40,000 instead of
$50,000. Second.
That works for, as long as Mike's good with that, that's cool. Only if Mike's good with that. So if you're good with that,
yeah,
then that's my motion.
Second.
Okay. Both maker and the seconder of the motion have amended the motion to $40,000. Councilmember Camp?
Thank you. Well, that answers my first question, whether or not there's a friendly amendment that was going to be approached. Just want to say that I appreciate the level of expertise, Mike, that you brought here. Very impressive. I would also like to say, pick up a copy of a Farmer's Almanac and look at that date just for grins. And you mentioned this word, but I still don't know what it is. What is a backline?
Backline is actually the instruments that the band would use, such as it may be more feasible and cost effective to rent a drum set from up here rather than to fly one up, you know, because of the airlines being so expensive, you know, and cartage services. So we looked at the costs, you know, of renting certain items from SIR Studios here in Seattle, as opposed to flying up our own personal, you know, equipment, which, you know, that if it's big, bulky, heavy, you know, we're seeing that, you know, if the rental is a better option. And so that's the back line, you know, drum sets, guitar amps, bass amps, things like that.
I'm musically ignorant, so if you're going to send a report up to me, make it in English because I'll otherwise what?
Yeah.
The other item is I hope that we're going to get periodic reports as expenditures occur. So if you 2 months into it, you've spent $40,000, we don't get any sudden surprises. I don't expect it to happen. I hope that the council won't then pick you, but I just want to make sure that we're all aware. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you, Councilman. Again,
I'm going to be severely disappointed if Mr. Sachs, you and Anik can't come up with more than $10,000 in
sponsorship. It's a challenge.
I'm just saying. That is concerning, I do think, for an event like this. And Mr. Brock, depending on, you know, lineup sounds, you know, pretty good. Maybe you give Cheryl a call up in number and then she'll come down and do us a solid evening from Manhattan Transfer. Yeah. She's local too.
There's a lot of you know, local talent, even a lot more local than we even understand that it's right in our backyard.
Right. I'm excited by all of it. I appreciate the breakdown. I do have a couple questions. One is that do we intend on, and maybe this is for Mike and or the chief, do we assume any additional cost to the city related to traffic control or anything with the additional, like some of the other events that we've had, as far as the expense line items?
Yeah, I actually have not built that in as far as additional expenses, but we know what the rates are. We've done that with other special events, so it's...
So that would be an interesting...
It wouldn't be something that would blow the budget.
Okay. We've done it before, so we should have at least an idea of what that cost is. Still not going to put us over to the 40 motion. Okay. Great. And then on the sponsorship side, I did hear, you know, our partner talk about if we could get a good radio partner from a, you know, a trade-out perspective, and also just, you know, suggestions for some of them, whether it's the paper, you know, side of things, or one of the... say that entertainment or communications companies that will do trade out for media advertising for sponsorship. I've done that myself in the past where I've sponsored an event and traded out advertising space for that. So there's just a lot of options, out there. But 3,000 is pretty low, so that was brought up. That we can. You can bump that up pretty quick when you do the swap out of stuff as you bring in sponsors. But I count on Jeff that there's no way you're only going to do 10 on that. Anyway.
Yield for a question?
Yes.
Well, how much will that spinity put up?
I'm not going to be able to vote.
Let him vote first.
Yeah. I have. I'm not involved. I'm a tech ops director, so I'm not involved with promotions in any way, shape, or form. So I don't know. But I can tell you my former employer. But the two things, I mean, I think when you look at it, you look at the breakdown, counting on revenue generation from this is what I'm seeing, and community enhancement. I think the key is that when you look at that community enhancement revenue generation, if we do get some key sponsors that are local too, where we could have been involved with events that have started, and if you can get that key sponsor out of the gate, it will grow that relationship. You know, it can become a very well-known, you know, type of thing. Look for it and they'll build, but it is going to be paramount for those sponsorships that we get out there now, because they're already building their third and fourth quarter budgets for sponsorship activity. So those were my couple comments.
Councilor McKevitt.
I just have one last question. I always have one more. I say it's my last and then I always do another one. Is this something that you're going to help out with every year? Is this going to become a tradition? And can we count on you, Mr. Brock?
Yep.
On the record.
Yes, I would love for it to become an annual event. Absolutely, I plan to, and this is what Mike and I were saying the other day, I plan, I'm here every month for at least a week, so my involvement throughout the entire process, you know, I will be here, you know, and so, and overseeing, yeah, all of the important aspects, so, yeah, I very much plan to be involved, you know, as much as I'm needed.
Well, I know that I'm going to vote for it tonight. I did not vote for it when it first came around. I had some concerns about the budget. I had some concerns about the details. Very supportive of the arts. I'm excited that our park department is going this direction. I think there's a real need for our community, and there's support in our community for it. It was just the budget and where it was coming from. So I'm glad to see that we have a good group of people on board with the skill set to hopefully make this very successful. So I will be voting for it for those reasons.
All right. Well, with that said, we will take a vote on the motion then. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Opposed. Thank you very much, Keith, for coming out.
Thank you.
Sharing tonight. Doug, appreciate you being here also as well, and your input too. Sunit, always a pleasure to have you join us. With that said, we will have to extend the business portion of the meeting past 8 o'clock. So if I could have a motion.
So moved.
Second.
And the motion is made by Councilmember Camp and seconded by Councilmember Petterback to extend past 8 o'clock the business and action portion of the meeting. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. With that said, I'm going to go with a little bit of a recess here to allow for some folks to either stay if you like or leave. But we'll recess for 4 minutes.
Thanks for coming to our lunch today.
Okay, we are now back in session. And Brad, you got a little presentation here.
We've talked about this several times before, the provision of sewers inside city limits only or in the entire urban growth area. In 2007, there was a court case that said what the city's ordinance says is not legal. It said that it was up to the council's discretion whether or not to serve city outside city limits, provided that the developer followed city design guidelines and several other conditions. That was overturned in 2007. In 2008, the city council adopted an ordinance and an interim emergency basis that said sewer service is prohibited outside city limits. That was extended twice, I do believe, but went away on October 22nd of 2010. Since that time, we reverted back to the unenforceable ordinance that says it's up to the city council's discretion to serve if people provide city development and meet city development standards. in light of the recent annexation attempt up in this area, the Roosevelt Ridge annexation that was overwhelmingly opposed by the residents of the area, it seems like we're going to have difficulty expanding our city limits to fill our urban growth area and meet our population projections for the current and the future population projections for both 2025 and 2035. So I was thinking, as bringing it back, since our ordinance we currently have is not enforceable, to bring it to the council to adopt a new ordinance that would allow the extension of sewer service to the entire urban growth area, as is allowed by the Growth Management Act, which is you can't extend sewer service outside of an urban growth area. And the purpose of an urban growth area is to provide urban services to the residents, and sewers being one of the urban services. It would also allow the city to meet its population goals, because the population goals basically are set for the entire urban growth area, not just what's inside city limits. With that in mind, it would still allow the population to be in this area and bring sales tax revenue and things like, you know, support businesses and things like that. However, then the city would not be required to provide street maintenance or stormwater maintenance, and it would be up to the police chief whether or not he sent people up there when something happened. So, with that, I'll be happy to take any questions or comments.
Did you do that? Yeah. Did you know I was reaching for it?
I did.
No. Thought you were good. Doing the tricks again. I do have questions.
You're on the floor.
Okay. Brad, so I'm trying to get this in the couple minutes. I've just read it, unfortunately. But so right now we don't provide water or sewer to the urban growth area.
Currently, our code says it's up to the city council. It's right. City council's discretion if they follow city design guidelines, which has been said that we can't do. So basically, our code doesn't address the
issue. Okay, so walk me through something. Okay. The developer is going to build in the urban growth area, which is outside the city limits. Do they come to us and say, we want to build on your city, or we want to build it according to city specifications?
No, they could if they wanted to, but we can't require them to do that.
Right, we can't require them because they're outside our limits. So
our proposal is that we are a utility provider, since we have an enterprise fund for the sewer system. It's just like the Olympic Terrace Sewer District. They go to this county, say we want to do a plat here. County says, here's the regulations. They say, how are you going to provide sewer? And they say, we're going to get it from the City of Monroe Sewer Department.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And that's the extent of our involvement with it.
Okay, so they come and say, we want to get it from the city, and we'll build it to city.
But the sewer is built to our standards.
Exactly.
Yeah, but not the lot sizes.
And so then we just start providing the service. They are building the infrastructure.
Correct.
When they develop.
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that the cost is falling on...
Yeah, it's completely on
whoever is building, and they let us know they want to do it, and then we can...
Yeah, and they've also, in the... Doing research, we also have new language to add to our code that explicitly says if you want to extend sewer service, you pay to put the mains in and things like that.
Okay. I look at this, and from what you've just told me, why wouldn't we do it? Do you know? So, I mean,
the reason in 2008 when the council at that time adopted it was because they wanted things to develop to city standards.
But
the lot sizes, the setbacks, the building heights, those sort of things to city standards.
So they wanted it to come in the city limits.
Yeah, whether or not there's sidewalks
and then
places or things like that. Yeah.
Okay.
So we wanted it to be in the city so the city can control everything.
Okay. But it still can. Okay.
Yeah. So basically, if it's in the county, I would look in the county regulations. The county for that zoning up there, which is in the county, is 7,200 square foot lots.
Right.
It's required to provide sidewalks. You know, things like that. So
right.
I think the divide between the development standards of the city and the county for urban growth areas is not as wide as it once was.
Okay.
And also another thing is what's happening a couple of times, as some of you who were around in the past, that the a developer will come to the city, we say, no, we don't have plans to put sewer up there, so they build half-acre lots, which sort of defeats the purpose of being in an urban growth area to have an urban lot sizes.
Right.
So...
Okay, I'm good.
What other areas besides the Roosevelt with this?
Basically, the green things are properties that have sewer already.
Yeah.
So It would be the Roosevelt Ridge area, the Robin Hood area, which is pretty much developed, but it would allow people, if they had a their septic system went bad, they could think about hooking up to sewer rather than trying to annex first before they hooked up to sewer.
If they won the lottery.
Yeah, and then the only other place is off of Ingram Road, around the old well site. That's the only other area that really that's in urban growth area that's not in city limits.
So is the growth area the red line?
No, growth area is the orange line. That one up there and over there. Red line is city limits. And then the purple line is the rural urban transition area. And the blue line far out is the city's water service area. Currently. And we talked about making a bigger call that way last week.
Where did ICANN, I'm sorry, where's the school on that?
Which school?
Which one? The high school.
High school is right there.
Oh, I see.
Okay. And the reason there's a green dot up there is that's Chain Lake Road Elementary School. They truck their sewage down to us. We don't have a line that goes out there. But they have a sewer account. That's where the information came from. So.
Okay, Councilmember Deering.
Thank you. I think I calculated this for probably the 14th time that this had come up since I had been here. It's been no every time. So when I read your recommendation, this time it was a... this time it's a yes.
Actually, 21 times.
Well, I don't think I was here in 2002. Yeah, okay. But yeah. Since I've been here, I counted 14.
Yeah, okay.
And in the audience, one of them was 15. It's been no every time. Let's not do this. As you kind of explained before, I was interested at when I opened it up, you know, to see what it would be. And it's a yes this time.
Yes.
And so as I read it, it kind of looks like we're kind of, okay, we're never really going to be able to annex this area, so let's get something out of it type of a thing is kind of the direction that where this is going now versus kind of giving up
annexations
in that in the Roosevelt Ridge area. There,
yeah, I mean,
Robin Hood may happen someday, though. That was
Basically, we heard from the people who voted that
in that particular
area that they don't want development. And so if they equate development with annexation, they're never going to vote for annexation. So maybe they'll develop, and then they'll say it was already here. They might see some reason to annex, but then again, not. Because the county, you know, the Growth Management Act really doesn't talk about annexation. It talks about urban services. You know, it provides for annexation if that's the way you want to do it. So,
Other costs, one of the things you're talking about here is increased revenue to sanitary sewer.
Mm-hmm.
We are... just had to raise sewer rates to pay for the expansion that there is.
Well, actually,
our current people.
That's not expansion. That's enhancement of existing processes for the existing customers.
And would not all these extra people put additional burden on everything?
And they're charged the about $7,000 per household to pay for the enhancements at the wastewater treatment plant.
And that's the
wastewater
through
capacity charge.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And then also, they get, just for day-to-day business, they get charged twice as much because the current out-of-city sewer rate was twice the inside sewer city rate. Which is something to think about if you annex them afterwards and you're going to say, we had all this money, and suddenly they annex, their sewer bills get cut in half. So
maybe that's a reason to annex.
Yeah.
So there's no concern, let's say all of Robin Hood signs up, but we don't have... capacity for, you know, when you flush, you want that to go somewhere.
Right.
And it's everybody hooks up, and yet we still have the existing facilities we have today. And,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, we
have to go to the right place. Yeah. It's supposed to go.
I mean, there is.
And so, I mean,
we have to manage our system and say, we only let people come in a certain amount of time. Everyone is not going to hook up tomorrow. Because it's very expensive to get sewer there in the first place.
Okay.
So it's probably right now, the way it's set up, unless you're doing a plat, it's cheaper to redo your septic system than hook up to the sewer. So there's not going to be a certain large... I mean, even if the stuff that's inside the city suddenly says, okay, we're going to build, you know, we have the same problem with the stuff that's already in the city limits of everything on... Chain Lake Road suddenly said, we're hooking up tomorrow.
Okay, so someone up at the top of Robin Hood wants to get in.
Mm-hmm.
How do they get on? Nobody else along the way wants
they
to
pay
like five houses.
They pay a whole lot of money.
Okay, and realistically, nobody's going to do that.
Right. So, but someday, eventually, the person at the bottom of the hill will have to hook up. And so they'll just start the process going up. Because we already have interest from the people who live... right here,
okay,
about developing their property, this large, it's a large lot. They can, I think, put 8 houses on it and hook into the sewer. So that basically that starts at the, you know, the sewer is right there now. So basically it's just a little bit, a little jump for them. And then the next large lot can hook up and, you know, jump, keep going up and up and up.
Theoretically. Right. So at the bottom, you know for sure that there already is interest at the bottom.
Yes.
Whether or not it moves up ever, okay, ever. Which alleviates one of my concerns. If it's actually right next door to us, then mm-hmm. that makes a little bit more sense.
Right. Same thing as these people over here who have been in and said, can we get sewer outside city limits?
Even though it will never...
They're immediately adjacent.
Be in the city as long as the current residents
are
there
yeah.
because they
yeah.
want to be in the city. Okay. All right. Possible increase in market for Monroe businesses with increase in sales tax revenue.
More people in the area, more people shopping.
How does okay.
Development mean equals
okay.
more buying power.
Yeah. More buying power. Yeah, okay.
Your market is
necessarily
bigger.
In Monroe, but they are coming in there, spending their money right. here in Monroe is what you're
yeah.
saying. Increased revenue to sanitary sewer utility. Okay, so more people are going to be using it. You can charge double rates.
We charge double rates.
So that's double rates. Are we going to have to use those double rates to build? You know, that's my the next line of thinking mm-hmm. for me is: are we going to have to do more to the wastewater treatment plant? Are we going to have to build another wastewater treatment? Are the enhancements we're making now okay? You know,
right.
So if this little group at the bottom mm-hmm. of Robin Hood does it, no problem.
Right.
If and you're just saying, managed over the course of time.
It'll be okay. Sanitary sewer system plan. This might be my computer.
We just had to raise rates to
right.
cover
it. Says that you know our plan is to have. I wrote it down somewhere. I think it's like 26,000 ERUs hooked to the wastewater treatment plant. That's the current plan that we have. If everybody up here. According to the buildable land survey that was just done, which is not quite final, but it's pretty close to being final. If everybody up there, all the houses are built, they can be built, and they hook up to the sewer system, and everybody who is currently in the city's limits that isn't hooked up to the sewer hooks up to the sewer, that would be a total of 23,524 ERUs hooked up to the wastewater treatment plant, which is less than what our plan calls for.
Less than what we think we can handle.
Well, I mean, it would still require expansion. Of the treatment plant, but it's worked into our system plan that we were going to, along the line, build things as accommodate more people.
If you have capacity on your treatment plant, you can go into sewer moratorium until you've expanded it.
Okay. So essentially, we'd be able to control.
Okay.
So
yeah.
We're not going
to. Everyone's just going to say we can actually do it. We're sitting there just
going
to point it out. It's going.
Okay. And you know, anything along the lines of. To do the expansion we had talked about anyway is going to require a rate increase at some point, obviously, and then we had to do it to
do right,
that. So hopefully this double, maybe that'll take a little bit of the sting mm-hmm. out of that when that time comes for doing that. So, all right, thank you.
Okay.
You know, I was here for a few of these conversations in these years as a council member, and I think, quite frankly, to put some light on it for others who haven't been... long is the reality was it, from my perspective is we were only using this as a tool to try to control what type of building took place in these urban growth areas. We don't provide sewer unless they build according to our specifications. Well, as Brad said, that ordinance is illegal. It's not valid. We can't demand that somebody outside the city meet city building requirements. So the question really is, I mean, bottom line, do we extend, offer it, or do we not? And I think that's where we're at today is knowing that that area is, you know, opposed to the annexation, that could change in 20 years. You know, they could choose to do that 20 years from now. But I guarantee you in the next 20 years, there's a strong likelihood that especially the Roosevelt area is going to develop. And so... Do we develop it on half-acre lots, or do we develop it at smaller lots with the possibility of having the sewer extended? That's where we're heading. So, Councilmember Williams, and in the past, I was opposed to it as well, but I think that Brad's created a very good case for moving forward.
So. Under the old scenario, why council voted against it, just to make it clear,
we would have had to first annex the area in order to provide sewer to them. But in annexing the area, aren't we obligated to provide sewer? If they're inside the city limits, don't we have to provide
sewer? I mean, just the same, they're inside our service area, which is defined as city limits, and we have to provide it, but they still have to pay for the extensions and things like that.
Okay,
even so if they're inside city limits.
There's no cost to the city to extend the city limits, and then we're obligated to immediately run sewer.
No. Okay. No.
So from that standpoint, it's really no difference.
Correct.
Our exposure. Correct. It's more of what you had just said. And yeah, it seems unlikely that the voting up there is going to change in the near future. So I don't. This makes sense, I guess. It doesn't. Provided, as Councilman Gehring said, we aren't immediately obligated to foot the bill on another rate increase.
Right.
So.
City Administrator Bradley.
Thank you, Mayor. Mm-hmm. And staff and myself, as included, are looking down the road many years. We're already talking, discussions with Sky Meadow Water District, the potential of taking over that area, and there's some other opportunities out there that I will be working on. I'll leave it at that at this point in time. That could change your thinking in that northern area. So, at any rate.
You want to become a water baron, don't you?
Yes.
I'm looking at down the road how our city may grow, and it's important to control those things.
To provide the best service.
That's right.
That's all good. Councilmember Kennebec.
Thank you. Brad, it would seem to me for maybe landowners who want to develop right outside the city limits, it seems like it gives them a choice, which might also be a selling point for developing that area. If it's right outside the city limits and they develop it and do and have it attached to our sewer, that might be a selling point to new homeowners to be on the sewer versus their own system, their septic system. So, that's one of the reasons why I think it's beneficial to move forward. It might actually increase, as you said, our boundaries and encourage annexation and all of that. So,
okay. Anybody up for a motion?
I'll do it.
All right.
Okay. Motion to direct staff. That is the recommended. To prepare an ordinance allowing for the City of Monroe to provide sanitary sewer service within the Monroe Urban Growth Area by April 16, 2013.
Sorry. Motion has been made by Councilmember Kettebank, seconded by Councilmember Hanford to direct staff to prepare an ordinance allowing for City of Monroe to provide sanitary sewer services within the Monroe Urban Growth Area by April 16, 2013. All right. Seeing no lights, we'll take a vote on the motion. All of those in favor say aye.
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 And opposed? All right. Motion passed. Thanks, Brad.
You're welcome.
And. Yep. Is it? You don't need the. Okay. Okay, on to the last item here in our regular portion of the meeting that is discussing the council rules.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate Councilmember Gehring and Councilmember Camp for bringing this topic forward. At staff level, we were already in discussions on the rules and procedures and some of the changes that needed to take place. So I didn't put a lot on the cover sheet because after going through the proposed or the items that we feel need to be addressed, we had two pages of concerns. Just to start out. So at any rate, we left it pretty open for the discussion tonight. The Transportation Committee did meet this evening with staff and the mayor and myself, and we actually had a really good discussion on some of the items that would probably need to be changed. And one of the matters that's first and foremost is how we elect the chair for those committees. I've seen it done two different ways. The rules of procedure say that council will appoint those chairs, but I've also seen the committee at the first meeting appoint their own chair. And I don't have a preference either way, but that is one of the things that needs to be resolved probably earlier on. And we can definitely go within our procedures, and council can appoint those chairs this evening, which would get us past where we are today, or council can wait to appoint those chairs until after we amend the rules and procedures. But this is done through our resolution process, so we'll have to put some work into it prior to coming back to council.
We, based on our conversation actually in the transportation committee, this could be something that the legislative affairs committee reviews, and so staff could bring that to the legislative affairs committee for some review or some at least for some initial feedback, and then based on that feedback, come back to council with that. When's the next time the Legislative Affairs Committee is?
It's be next Tuesday night.
It would be next Tuesday night. Is that too early? No. So something to consider. Right. I would be glad to do that if council would like to direct us to do so. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I believe that one of the options we have for community championships is to make a motion to modify or to defer to the communities and have them choose their own chairpersons. So I would like to propose a motion that we allow that for the 2013 communities to decide their own chairperson.
Second.
Motions are made by Councilmember Camp and seconded by Councilmember Kearing to allow for the committees or to defer to the committees their ability or right or whatever you want to call it to appoint their own chair. Your light is on, but is that for this
either
motion or is it for something
else? A comment related to that, and then I'll do that. And then a few others. And I appreciate and thank you, Mayor, for that. Agreement with Councilmember Camp, I have looked through that, and in my experience, every time there's been a committee, the committee just kind of, you know, chose among themselves. And so I was just looking through this, you know, we've been doing cleanup, right, all along the way, and a number of things, comp plan, ethics ordinance, all kinds of things we're cleaning up. And then through this one, and it said, you know, we're supposed to do it as I don't ever remember doing that. Gene remembers doing it that way, perhaps once or twice. I don't remember that at all. So fully in support of Councilmember Camp's motion, which is why I seconded it. And if we were going to change something, then, you know, I think that's an easy change in a resolution to say, just, you know, let the committees. But, you know, I don't want to be accused of not following our own rules. And so, you know, that kind of stuff is out there. So let's make sure that we are, right? So if we're going to do that, let's make sure. I think that's 13... 13-6 or something. 13-A-6. Right. And again, my other point, and I appreciate you're kind of assigning that as well. And that's something we certainly have done in the past. Council says, hey, this committee should take that on or this and that. And so, and then, you know, just a general review of that, because in 13-A-1, you know, it's, it was the purpose of the committees was just for further study. That's what the committees were for, not, you know, running off and doing their own thing. And in my experience, that's the way that it always has been as well. So I'm fully in support of the motion with regard to that, and then look forward to further discussion on some of the other items. Thank you.
Okay, and we'll that motion in particular. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Then would it be Councilmember Williams?
Your comment on having the legislative committee review this would be helpful, because I wanted to look into what the issues were and wasn't able to do that today because there's not information here anyways, but it'd be helpful to have a recommendation from them. And my other question is this just in reference to Section 13A, or are there other areas of this rules and procedures that the legislative committee would like to review as well?
I guess we haven't passed it out yet, but Edie did a great job of outlining all the items that we should be looking at, so we will have that to you. We'll email it out to all the council members in the next day or so at least you have what we've done so far. We only had a few moments today to go through it, and again, I appreciate Amy's work that she's done, so it'll be more than just that.
It's more than just Section 13.
It's the whole rules and procedures from 1 through 13 or whatever.
So I would personally like to see the committee come back with recommendations
before we discuss it as a council, would be my hope.
Okay. Okay, with that said, then we have consensus of council. We'll have a legislative committee meeting next Tuesday, at which time we will discuss the council rules and procedures. And that is, who's on that one?
Legislative, it's Mr. Councilmember Hanford, Davis, and myself.
Okay. And hopefully you're all able to attend.
And whoever's not will be the chair.
That's also how it's worked in the past. If you didn't show up, you were the chair.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Tonight was really the main question for this evening was the question regarding the chair speech. The other ones we were anticipating a later discussion. So, all right, we'll bring that to the council committee. Councilmember Gearing?
Quickly, thank you. One of the other things I noticed was that there are four committees here, and traditionally, in the past, there had been four. We changed to three last year. It still lists four. So just those kind of things is why I had asked at least the council can have a brief discussion on it tonight. Thank you.
You realize that third committee is awful big.
It's huge. Yeah. At administration's recommendation last year to combine them. So, yeah. You know, again, it's still four, and if we need, you know, it's a discussion to have.
But we'll bring that up at the legislative committee as well.
If we need it, yeah.
We didn't realize today in our transportation committee, I mean, really the impact, especially with the scope of work that we're doing this year, with parks, with planning, with transportation, they're going to have at least two meetings a month.
Wow.
Coming up here shortly. Is there anybody?
Breakfast dudes.
Yeah.
No, I know. As I said, that's great. Good job.
He's like, more power to that committee. Yeah. Absolutely.
Have fun. All right.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Appreciate it. Well, then, moving on here, we don't have an need for an executive session tonight. So at this time, we'll recess the meeting and reconvene in the study bit session. Portion of the session, and first up we have a presentation by our finance director, Diane Nelson, and this is the second installment of our department reports for 2013 related to goals, and I just wanted to kind of reset the stage again. Some of these goals are intended to hopefully be achieved in 2013, but others are intended to lay the foundation for either 2014 or 2015, and we'll see that as we move through the through the presentation. So,
okay, this is the finance department goals, and you've already had police and parks, and those departments are more public outreach type departments. Finance more internal support. And I'm all excited about all our goals and everything, but when I looked at the list, I realized to the average person it's probably kind of dry. And so, I mean, it gets me going, but not anyone else. And so to spare you, I have just done a presentation on the highlights. And so... So in your packet is the list of all the goals. And so I'm not going to go through the whole list. You can see it in the packet. And I don't want to make your eyes glaze over. There's 23 items on the list. 16 of them we're going to do in 2013. 7 are long-term goals. And there's only 3 that I'm going to talk about tonight. And there were 3 that the mayor recommended I talk about. And so you don't have to go through all 23. The 3 goals I'm going to talk about tonight is the community spring cleanup event, which is going to be done in April of this year, the meter reading conversion to a one-spot rating, which is a long-term goal, and the addition of a staff accounting position, which is a long-term goal. The community cleanup event, that was something I did a presentation last year on, and it was a huge success. It has a real feel-good feeling about it. Brings together neighborhoods. Like there were some neighborhoods where like a guy with a pickup truck was going around to each house in his cul-de-sac and coming back several times. You know, it's free to the citizens, and it's
Other groups participate in it, like, you know, the girls' basketball provided food and drink as a fundraiser. Seniors can call ahead of time, and we will get people to pick their stuff up. And it's just slowly becoming each year it's going to get bigger and better. We learned a lot about traffic control and different things that they're going to do different this year to make it run a little smoother. And it's one of those things that each year she's... Kim Reeves is the coordinator for it. She's going to work to get more and more activities like, not this year, but the next year, we're trying to work with the county to get hazardous waste disposal so people can bring all their old paint cans and things like that. And, you know, we're just going to slowly expand each year, just get better and better each year. The cost savings is tremendous. It's so much cheaper than having the curbside in... what you get in return, I think, is a much better deal. People pay you a lot less for their garbage rates, and you can recycle a lot more with this event than you can with the curbside. So it's something that we feel really strong about, and it's going to happen April 27th this year, and it's going to be a cool thing, cooler this year than last. Appliances are accepted for free. Refrigerators have $20 fee because of the Freon in them. And tires are accepted for free. So it's a pretty cool event, and it's something that staff really looks forward to. I get all staff to work for comp time so we don't have to pay overtime. And so it works out. It's a pretty good deal for the city. It's a good deal for the citizens. It's a good deal for the community. It's a pretty nice thing. And it's one of the few... public outreach things that finance does. Fixed radio reads for meters. This is a long-term goal, and this is something that I'm very much excited about. Right now, we have a meter reader who works for the Public Works Department. He's out in the field named Matt, and it takes him one full week to read all the meters for our monthly billing. It takes a full week of his work. Then during the month, we send him out every single day to check for leaks, to reread the meters that had super high or super low consumption, because we need to check, double check to make sure there's nothing wrong. And for all the final bills, he has to go out and reread those, because if someone says, I'm moving out on the 20th of the month, he has to go out and read it. And so it's a lot of work. What would be so nice is if we can get a radio read that's fixed at City Hall, that means that the gals sitting up front who do the billing, they can generate the bills at any time. Don't have to wait for the crew to go out and read the meters, and so we can stagger our billing, or we can be more flexible with our billing. It frees up us a lot. You can check meters hourly. You can do the radio read hourly. So if someone says, well, you know, we can say, well, we read your meter at 10 o'clock this morning, then 11 o'clock this morning, and so we can tell you have a leak, you know, or that you don't, because it completely stopped, so you don't have a leak, you know, things like that. It just, we can do all the stuff that isn't being done manually. It's just done with a push of a button. And so I love that. It frees up Matt to do other work. He's needed for a lot of other things, and so... just as Public Works crews stretch very thin, it allows them to utilize him for other things. Jake and I have been meeting with vendors. Jake had just met with a guy today. He and I had met with the guy earlier and supplied him with a bunch of material. And Jake had met with him this afternoon, and he hasn't gotten back to me yet. So I don't know if the guy had a price for us yet. But we're going to try to figure out costs and feasibility of the program, because if it's really expensive, we're going to try to figure out some other way to get it. You know, there's different things we can do, other cost-saving measures we can make that would counteract the cost of this. But it's something that, it's the way of the future. It's going to be happening eventually anyway. We're going to try to find the cheapest way to do it. But it's a long-term goal for us.
Hold on there. And I just want to say that this is a perfect example, I think, and appreciate how Diane has continued to look for ways to not only create efficiencies within her own department, but this will have a double efficiency impact in that it will improve our ability to respond to our customers and to generate bills and things like that here in the finance department. But also, as you said, Matt will be now free to tackle those issues that are you know, needed in public works departments too. So I just wanted to say appreciate your leading in this direction. So, Councilmember Fedebeck, do you have a question?
Diane, I just have one question. Seems great, like the flexibility and the customer service impact and then city staff time. Are there other cities right now who are using this in our kind of Snohomish County? Or
I don't think so. Okay. I think maybe in King County, but not.
So King County maybe?
Yeah.
And do you have any kind of estimate of what the cost is? Are you getting no idea?
We're brand new. So we just started working on this.
Okay. I didn't know if you knew.
Yeah. Haven't gotten there yet.
So no, none in Snohomish County?
None that I know
that
of.
You know.
I'll find out. I'll find out. Jacob said he looked into it a few years ago. He said it was just super cost prohibitive.
Right.
So it was like, forget it. But I think now it's becoming more commonplace.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
Yeah, like anything.
Down.
Sure.
So now I think it's the time to start looking at it seriously.
Okay, thanks.
City Administrator Brad.
To expand on that question a little bit, this is not new technology. This has been something that we actually looked at in the mid-90s. It can also be done through phone lines.
It's just...
Yeah, so it is a new technology, but they have made it more cost-effective, and I think it's Warm Beach or somewhere up north has a similar system that is in operation. It's been in operation for 10 years. So
oh, okay.
At any rate, there is other cities
that,
and water districts that do operate with this particular system.
And the reason I ask that is it might be initially an expensive undertaking, but then if you look at the long-term possible savings that it could have, you could construct a spreadsheet that kind of shows the payoff down the road. So
the present value
someone, exactly. Somebody, some other who's had this for a while might have that information.
I think the vendor that Jake and I are talking to, he said he was going to do some kind of analysis like that.
Okay.
So.
Okay, thank you.
I'll be interested to see what he came up with.
Hey, Councilor, do you?
Yeah, and that was my question is this, are we looking, when you say you're meeting with vendors, are we looking at a hybrid of different, because there's a lot of different mediums that you can use, you know, to accomplish this, whether it's RF or it's, you know, it's copper via just a phone line or, you know, fiber-based solutions, all that type of stuff. So is it, are we just talking RF, radio frequency radio, or is it a hybrid, you know?
I think it's just radio, this particular system.
This first one we're looking at, but we're going to look at them all. I mean,
right, okay. That, so, yeah. That answered my question. And then if that's the case, the other, I know that, I can look too, but the city of Wenatchee, East Wenatchee, when they rolled their networks out, their telecom networks and fiber networks in early 2000, that was one of the big things that they promoted as a part of that rollout was the ability to this.
So, because of the climate?
Well, and it just may be one of those things that, I mean, that was 13 years ago, so they may have some, hopefully one of these vendors. But I'm glad to hear that we're looking at all of the different
things.
Because the RF, there's going to be issues with reaching everybody via RF.
Yeah.
Especially with an airport.
So the anticipation is that after doing some more research, if Diane and Jake are able to come up with two or three examples and believe that the feasibility of the program is appropriate for the city of Monroe, we'll bring this back to the finance committee or to council for the finance committee to review and either move forward based on their recommendation or not. So.
Okay. And then the third one is a staff accountant position. This is future as funds allow, obviously. The city used to have a finance director, treasurer, and a utility billing manager. They currently just have me. And so the new position would be able to do a lot of the monthly accounting reconciliations that I'm doing, and that would free me up to tackle department long-term goals, to implement strategic budgeting, and perform monitoring tasks that the auditor wants us to do that I'm quite frankly not doing a great job of right now because I'm trying to do so much. And it would help us have improved accounting practices for dedicated funds. And what I would really like if I had enough time is to really get into strategic budgeting, which is different. Right now we do budgeting year to year. Strategic budgeting is more long term, looking at the long term and budgeting for the long term. And also you can turn that into budgeting for outcomes rather than just budgeting for dollars. And so it's something that I would much rather focus on, but it takes more time and resources. which we kind of don't have. So right now we do the bare bones year-to-year, budget-to-budget budget system. Also, a lot of our dedicated funds, we take in a lot of special revenue funds, and I would like to track them a lot better than the way we do now. And if I had additional staff, we could. For instance, money in the agency funds, it comes in and it goes out, and before it goes out, we verify that it did come in, but we don't have a spreadsheet that's tracking every single one. Like the impact fees, we're tracking totals, but not individual impact fees. And there's an assigning interest to each individual when we're assigning interest in the totals. And I'd like to have that broken up. There's just a lot more detailed accounting that I would like to do to our dedicated funds that we're not doing now. I mean, we're meeting the bare minimum, but I would like to do a better job. And then a lot of monitoring. What state auditor requires for internal controls is you either separate duties among staff to keep things internal controls, or if you don't have enough staff to separate all the duties, you have someone monitor what they're doing. And I don't always have time to stop and go through what all my staff is doing. You know, sometimes I have to trust that they're doing it right. And so I try to do as much monitoring as I can since we're a smaller entity, but I don't feel like I'm doing as much as I should. And so those are just things that I would like us to do better than we do right now. And so, but we're broke. Well, we were broke. We're getting out of the hole. And so it's just something I want you to be aware of, that that's a long-term goal of mine, is to beef up the department standards. And
well, before we go on,
yes.
The mayor's not going to call.
No, I wasn't sure if she was going to say if we have any questions, and she does. So
is this a requirement from the state auditor? I guess I'm a little confused on that.
Yeah.
It sounds like it is.
It is, but it's to what degree you do it is the fuzzy area. They say you have to have internal controls, right. And there's two ways you can do it. You can split up duties among staff, but if you have limited staff and you can't split up everything, then you have one person monitor what they do. And so it's... I sign off on all the journal entries that are done. I sign off on all the adjustments that are done. But sometimes I look at him and I'm like, yeah, okay, that looks good. But sometimes I would like to go a little further than just eyeballing everything. There are different reports that people do that I sign off on that I go through them, but I would like to go through them better. The accounts payable batches that you guys sign, I go through all of those, but I would like to go. But sometimes I go through them fast. I would like to go through them slow. Things like that.
Now, what about you mentioned strategic budgeting as goals? What is? Have an example of something? I'm just trying to picture.
Well, it's a whole process where you. You spend a lot of time with your long-term goals, figuring out your long-term goals, your long-term priorities, putting them into a plan. It's encompassing the comp plan that the city has. Like for the budget process, you would pull out the comp plan and open it up, because the comp plan spells out your long-term goals. And you take that and incorporate that into the budget process. And then you figure out... You figure out what revenues you're going to be getting for over a period of years and how you're going to apply that to your comp plan goals.
So we're not doing that now. Correct.
Or we do, and we're aware of the comp plan, but it's not done formally.
Okay.
Council doesn't sit down with the comp plan at the beginning of the budget season. And it would require probably more presentations and workshops that I would do to council, you know, for council, and then... It would just be more time consuming.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Councilmember Hammond.
Yes. Thank you. My question was going back to the community cleanup. By the way, everything looks great. Thank you. The question was, I remember last year I brought up the fact that I made three trips in one day, and nobody wants ID me to see if I was a city resident. So I'm just following up on that to see what the
plan
was.
That's on their list of things that they're changing this year.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
And we'll be issuing a citation in the mail.
They were, yeah, they were a little overwhelmed last year. They know better what they need to.
They're not going to harass me, though, for this year.
No. No, we've got a picture of you.
Here comes Amber.
He's the guy.
We
had a poster.
Does anyone have any questions about anything? Or is there anything you would like finance to focus on or look at? Or?
And, of course, certainly that's a question that we can have asked tonight, and we can have the finance committee take a further look at it if you should desire. Why don't you go to the next slide, because that was the one. There's the just questions on the other last slide. I mean,
oops, delayed, lost it. Sorry.
At five.
But anyway, yeah. Does anyone have any questions?
No.
That's.
Oh, but I knew F5.
Yeah.
PowerPoint.
You know PowerPoint.
Okay, well, it doesn't sound like it, Diane. Thank
okay.
you very much.
Great job, Diane. Okay. Appreciate
thank
it.
Okay, Councilmember Gamble has to excuse himself, and so we'll let the record show that, that he's doing so. Thank you very much, Councilmember Gamble.
Thanks.
And we move on now to Denise.
Good job, Dan. Yeah, nice job. Hold and firm.
Provide a brief overview of three of the long-term goals that deal mainly with risk assessment, business continuity, disaster recovery, and virtual desktop infrastructure. The first goal I'm going to go over is the IT risk assessment. The IT risk assessment is to identify potential sources of risks and the impact to the city if the risks materialize. An example would be the loss of data, negative publicity, loss of services, and it's very expensive to fix. An example of a breach would be if somebody from outside hacked into our network. They could have the potential to compromise police or financial data, or they could steal it, just like what happened in Gold Bar not that long ago. They sold that $400,000. Did you hear about that? Yeah. It was a lot of money. This would be a risk level matrix of the likelihood of an event to occur. These are the types of risks that would need to be identified so steps could be taken to address these risks. And this is how a risk assessment would be done. You would look at the likelihood of threat, the impact, whether it's low, medium, or high. And from that, you can identify the critical areas that you really need to address to minimize that potential risk. The next goal I'd like to talk about is disaster recovery and business continuity plan. We do have a good backup plan today. Right now, our data is being stored locally and it's being stored off-site. However, we do not have the hardware infrastructure in place should a disaster occur. We do have the data, we don't have the hardware. Currently, the restore time to order a new server, to build a new server, to recreate a new server, probably would be more in the likelihood of 5 days. However, if a catastrophic event should occur, the problem would be it would probably take about a month or so to recover and restore data back to where we were, especially if we needed to find a new location to build an office. That would take a long time to get up and running again. If we had a redundant cloud system in place, the operations could resume very quickly as long as we have an internet connection. the internet connection that we have today. We only have one, so we need to do a redundant connection as well. So, but in a catastrophic event, I'm not quite sure if the internet connection would be up. But at least it's just another layer of planning and being proactive. The last goal I'd like to discuss is the virtual desktop infrastructure using a thin client. The thin client is mainly a PC that doesn't have a lot of resources. The processing on a thin client is done at the server level. So we don't have to buy a PC, we would just buy like a little terminal or a thin client. It's a very scaled down PC. This has an effect of less administration and support, faster computing environment. There's a centralized applications, so the cost of licensing is less expensive in a VDI environment. There's an increased computer lifespan as well. Roughly, the thin clients are running about 8 to 10 years of life, whereas a PC runs about 5. The cost of a terminal is about $350. The cost of a PC is about $1,100 each. So we have roughly 100 machines. It's quite a big difference. Also, the thin client uses less power, which is about 50% less power. So again, you're saving money in energy costs. Let's see. Yep, that's it. These are the three goals that I wanted to discuss.
And you know, certainly there are several other things that are on a much smaller scale, but
right.
But really, as Denise was talking tonight, what we wanted to get across is that, and we are really wanting to communicate, and we'll have further discussions as council desires and as Denise is ready to make, you know, certain recommendations with regards to each of the goals. But we're, you know, it's geared towards the stability of our systems, the protection of our systems, and the efficiencies of our systems. And so for that, I just want to say thank you for the input and thought that you put into the goals that you've shared tonight. And you know, truly meets what we're looking at as a city overall. So thank you for that. And with that said, there are several lights on, so we'll move to the first, which I believe is Councilor Camp. But I'm not sure.
Several lights. Oh, that's fine. I'm just curious. So what's your definition of a critical failure?
Catastrophic failure. Well, it could be an earthquake. It could be floods. It could be a tornado.
Okay, but I'm thinking, what if you have a server meltdown here? Is that
a server meltdown? If I had a fire in the server?
If the hard drive exploded, the power supply deteriorated, whatever. So essentially, your server is no longer there. You still estimate a 5-day return or a 5-day.
No, that would be it. Would be catastrophic if we lost the servers.
Okay.
If we lost one server,
right,
we could have minimum downtime.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to understand. So I know the earthquake, everything that could possibly go wrong there, but just something like a server. So you have a backup. You do have a backup server.
No.
On site.
I do not have a backup server. So I do not have a redundant server. So, I mean, I could go down to Fry's and pick something up real quick and inexpensive that will get us through. Do we want to do that long term?
I don't know. That's what
I don't know what Fry's offers as far as servers, you know. But I think in the meantime, I would normally pick a Dell. Right now, I have virtual servers running. Those things are very pricey. They have a lot of RAM. They have a lot of hard, you know, disk space. They're very powerful. They're very expensive. I don't think Fry's is going to handle that. Okay. But in the meantime,
what my question is if we've got a catastrophic event like an earthquake or flood, whatever, that's kind of remote, but the possibility of a major hit causing the server to be non-functional is less likely, but still more likely than the earthquake. But the city doesn't have a backup server or some.
No. I don't have a redundancy built in at this point. That's why I would like to improve on the disaster recovery this year and have a couple of spare servers on site,
right.
Have a second internet connection up, have a couple, I need some spare parts, I need some spare equipment.
I agree. I mean, something right. of that nature, which is, like I said, more likely than the earthquake scenario,
right.
Makes a lot more sense to have some sort of a backup process, parallel server, something.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Councilor Pivot.
Denise, the thin clients, is that what you call them?
Uh-huh.
Can you put that slide, do you mind
sure.
putting that back up? Because you listed several advantages to mm-hmm. kind of moving in this direction. I thought for finance we set up a technology reserve fund that would replace computers over their lifespan.
Yeah.
So that set up. So I guess you've mentioned this and this being a long-term goal.
Mm-hmm.
As we look at replacing machines from the technology reserves, is this something like we start this year? Like, I mean, is this?
Well, the servers have to be really powerful servers. So, what I would like to do this year is do a test environment, take a department, and buy a server that will service. You know, a few people in a department and just try out and test the VDI environment and see how it works out. That's what I'd like to do this year. And then if that works, then move on.
Okay.
Because it will be an expense. And we can do this in phases.
Yeah, over time.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be all at once because I think it would be very expensive to do.
Yeah, we'd assume we could replace it as machines were coming up
right.
to be replaced. If we're going to move in this direction, wouldn't you
right.
look at moving in this direction instead of getting another desktop?
Right.
Because that was my question.
Yeah.
So is this something... But it sounds like you need a different server for this.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. And
yeah,
plus... I'd have to look at the connectivity, too, to the desktop, because right now I'm using, you know, a cable. There's faster connections that I can install to go from the server to the client.
Okay.
So
okay.
that is something that I'd have to look at as well.
Okay. All right. Thank
and
you.
The cost of that.
Thank you. Councilmember Geary?
Thank you. Thanks for putting together the information. A couple things. One little red flag with no... backup server, Councilmember Camp's point. Would that be maybe a little sooner than
yes.
later with that? The IT guy in me
mm-hmm.
gets very uncomfortable when there's not a backup with my own stuff, let alone the city stuff. So I want to certainly agree with what Councilmember Camp said. Secondly, a lot of emails about the transition of back away from Google. Back to does it fall under loss of data or IT risk assessment as far as that kind of stuff? Where does that fit? Into here, is that separate? You know, there's money and time and whatnot involved with that.
The risk assessment?
Yeah. Is that where that falls in?
The Google Mail.
And we're done with it. That just didn't work out, I guess.
The problem there... There was loss of data. The communication between City Hall and the police department was hit or miss. Calendar features were not accessible between police department and City Hall. One's using Outlook, one's using Google Apps. So we would send an email over to the police department and they would not receive it. So they'd have to walk over to City Hall or we would walk over to PD to give them the message. So, you know, just didn't work out. There were just compatibility issues between the two and having two domain names. Yeah, so.
Does that fall into an assessment of, you know, what it's going to take to go back? We still had everything we had before, so it's just, you know, does the Monroe WAD domain, you know, go away? What happens with that? All the broadcast of,
mm-hmm.
of that around the community, what happens there?
We are doing a migration this weekend. I've been sending out emails.
I saw a number
okay.
of them, yeah, and that's
okay.
why I'm asking, just because
right.
I don't know that we...
discussed it.
Exactly.
Right.
And does it affect us?
Yeah, it will affect you. We are migrating the data from Google Apps back to Exchange this weekend, and what will happen is instead of going to our Google Apps, going to Gmail and logging in that way, we'll go back to what we used to do, which was going through the Outlook web access. And so we'll have a different link to log into. The interface with Outlook web access and Exchange 2010, because we have an upgraded to version of Exchange, the interface is supposed to be a lot better than it used to be. So, you know, we'll be doing that this weekend, and starting Tuesday, I'll send out a new link somehow. Somehow. I will notify you of the new link, and you can start getting email that way. It just didn't work out. It's too bad, because I really liked Google myself.
Yeah, personally, I thought it was I liked the interface. But.
Yeah, I did too. So, okay. But it just doesn't seem to work in our environment today.
Okay. And going, but no concerns going back with, you know, record retention and public records requests and all those kind of things.
Yeah, we'll be able to migrate all the data over. Everything will go into the inbox. Like if you have folders, have to move them back into the inbox, then we're going to sync the email that's in the inbox back
folders
into
became out. Labels and
yes,
do labels,
the labels.
Labels become folders again or they
yes yeah well what's going to happen I think in this case is we have if you're using labels you have to use the labels drag them up to the inbox and then it'll be converted. But you know what, I'll have a document on that. The vendor's actually setting up a document to explain all this.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Councilman Williams.
Thank you. Have we looked at, as far as the data recovery, and you talked about the concerns of something happening to the server here, have we looked into securing our server offsite in a secure location?
That is something that I plan to do. That is one area, again, in the disaster recovery business continuity is to have an offsite. We do have a contract with the school district that goes back many years that we could put our redundant servers at the school upstairs in the high school or the middle school here. And we have to finish the fiber connection. There's a fiber connection that goes out to the poles out here. We'd have to complete that fiber connection in order to do that. But that was one possibility, and we did set up a contract with them to do that.
Yeah, I was talking, so my company, we got tired of hosting our own servers mm-hmm. and all the maintenance and the security mm-hmm. that we had to deal with. And so we now have our servers in a company that's what they do. Not the school, it's the company that's got a security guard and you have to have ID to get in, and no one else is touching our servers. We still manage them, do everything, but they've got, I think, 5 redundant internet connections mm-hmm. and multiple power sources and generators, so mm-hmm. we never go down. You know, there's just never an issue that we're going down.
Right.
And so I was wondering if we've looked at something like that or if we're thinking about that just from a standpoint of having our servers somewhere where we don't have to worry about outside influence on them.
That would be a risk assessment as well. I mean, and it would also be in business continuity plan. And yes, there is that possibility of doing that. We just have to see how much the cost would be.
Sure. And then the other thing is, do we currently have a password policy? I know that I've heard that we've had some problems with emails getting hacked, and I don't think I've ever been prompted to change my email password. And so, again, as part of these risk assessments as a city, do we have a password policy?
We do have a password policy. We have it to change right now every year, even though it should be every 6 months. Or
is that just
every 3 months?
Every quarter network?
No.
Is that just network login and not email? Because I don't believe I've ever been prompted to change my email password.
Right now when we go back to Outlook, you're going to be prompted to change it because that's going to use your Windows authentication because it will use the OWA. Google, I do have a password enforcement policy on there. I think I put a year.
And that should maybe be something else that we address
right.
from a security standpoint because wouldn't fly in lots of companies.
No, it wouldn't fly in lots of companies. We have had a lot of issues with the users here. It's created a lot of administrative challenges. So that's why I did put it out to here. And I'm trying to move it up, but again, we are redoing the policies too. So we're looking at the IT policies this year. And I know for the audit for the WCIA, they also want password policies implemented as well. And we'll just have to deal with the nightmare when users forget their passwords. Because that's what usually happens. You know, so. But that's what we have to do.
Councilor McCann.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask a question now. Are the police records also on these servers, the city servers, or are you running a separate system?
They're on. Records management system is on a separate server that doesn't really connect to City Hall at all.
Okay, but are they co-located in the same room? I don't know where you guys keep it.
They're in the back room.
Okay, but
the server room back there. They're all at the same location.
Okay.
Yeah, it's in a locked room, air conditioning. Yeah, they're all together.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
All right, any other questions for News? We'll be seeing more as it goes on here.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Denise.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do a lot of research online, went to municipal research, and I want to thank Councilmember Kerrion for the research you did as well. I think the policies that you brought up were more applicable to this particular subject than what I found. But I also did throw in a few that spoke about social media. And, you know, from my review, there weren't a lot of successes out there, which was concerning to me. But nonetheless, there are cities that have tried to move forward in this direction and allow that to happen. So my hope this evening is just to have some council direction and discussion happen here and move on one way or the other.
Councilmember Gary.
Thank you. And again, I appreciate the topic getting brought up. Some discussion, I guess we'll call it, in October and November with regard to this. When I found the Cheney one in particular, because it specifically dealt with council members, and that's kind of where our discussions had been in the past, and what are the best practices, what makes most sense, but ultimately what's in the best interest of the city? We're here to protect and be aware of the pitfalls of open government. We have to be very careful, about all those kinds of things, making sure that everything that's supposed to be disclosable is disclosable, and how do you do that in the world of social media? And caution has been everything we've been told so far. Either don't do it at all, or if you do it, make sure you're asking somebody before you do it, from Lou Lai, from our own attorney. We've heard those things, all the different articles and whatnot. I personally, I don't know if anybody had a chance to look through the stuff. Quickly with Councilmember Ketebeck, who had seen the Seattle one as well. I personally think the Cheney one, if you had a chance to read it, it is clear, concise, and I've kind of been kicking around, what should we include in a Monroe one, putting those, a little bit of that together on my own time. Would certainly base it, pretty much straight off the Cheney one with our own, the own things, our own kind of Monroe items that we might want to add ourselves. But as far as a like where we should start type of a thing. I what I read in here I thought was clear, concise, it made sense. It looked like it was putting, you know, the city first. And there's some inconveniences certainly with being a council member when you're not, you know, do whatever you want, you know, say whatever you want. And we're certainly restricted in who we can meet with, what we can say, you know, where we can be, things like that. And, you know, that's just part of our responsibility here. So how do we be responsible and yet do it at the same time? And so reading through this, I think that I don't know that anybody, perhaps except the Councilmember Cuddeback, has a public site where you represent, where one represents themselves as an elected official. It's sort of not necessarily directed towards that, but the discussion needs to be had. What's in the best interest? What will protect the city in records requests? What are the, and keeping personal and campaign stuff separate? So all that stuff I think needs to go in. I didn't see that kind of stuff in here. I certainly think that needs to be discussed as well, maybe in our own little tailoring to what we want to do here in Monroe. But certainly from an opening standpoint, I don't know if everybody had a chance to look at the Cheney one, but liked what I saw, and I thought at just as a basis, something we should definitely consider as the basis for what we adopt here. So that's it for me at the end. Look forward to what others think with regard to that.
Okay, Councilmember Kim.
Thank you. I have to agree with Councilmember Gehring. I like the Cheney example we have. I'm still not clear on the actual coverage risk, what the exposure is for the city. If, as an example, somebody is discussing a current event with the going on before city council, and that is written in as a Facebook post somewhere, is the city responsible to collect that information from wherever it is? And if, as a council member, I put it there and forget about it, does the city take the brunt out of whatever? And I assume there are fines that would be involved. Those are some questions that I haven't seen a good answer for. I really would like to know what the exposure is. This answers a lot of the questions, and I agree with you. I think it would be a good starting point. I would like to see, and I hope other council members will give you their opinions, the city be involved in handling the social media, providing it for the council members so that they have ready access to it to collect whatever information. And that's all I've got. Thank you.
Can you restate that portion? You would like the city involved?
The city involved in providing the social media tool to allow us to communicate to the public. That way they would be responsible, or the city would have the ability to collect whatever information they need for public records requests. That's that's the biggest concern that I have heard from other people I've talked to, and one of my legal instructors who mentioned that was a key component in their review for a social network, social media for elected officials.
Would you yield just for a comment?
I'm actually done.
I believe it was the Botha policy where there was actually like a council corner type of thing.
Do they have it?
But one of the recommendations that's consistent throughout is that if you're posting things, restricting anyone from commenting on what you post, because that then becomes the public record. You're having a discussion with people, and you are presenting yourself as an elected official in whatever role you might be in. That needs to be disclosed and retained. And I mean, when you read through these, I mean that's the level to which this starts to go. And so I wanted to keep note. There's a council member policy, okay, and then there's a city use of social media. To me, those are okay. They're just in my initial thing. Those are kind of two things that might need to be handled separately. There's certain, you know, whether you have the, because we have city Twitters and we have city Facebooks and we have canine. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that, you know, where people do, which is great. And I don't know if that's, when I was looking through this, I was thinking more from an elected official standpoint. What are you saying? What's the best practice? And if the city controls that, you know, Do we even allow, based on what we've read, do we even allow people to comment on that? Is it really just, hey, here's what's going on type of a thing? You know, if, I'm like, is
that supposed to? I'm sorry.
Not allowing people to respond back is the recommendation in many of these things.
Okay.
Where you're just saying, hey, here's what's going on, or here are, you know, boom, hey, everybody, you know, X, Y, and Z. In a
right.
city-controlled type thing.
So it's not an interaction?
That's the recommendation in many of these, is not actually interaction for council members, which is different than, you know, others do, or, you know, when you have a conversation with someone, you know, you're interacting, right?
Right.
Conversation is not public record. One on social media is, right? So, you know, how you do city social media.
Giving no pressure. Yeah, right.
City, so I do the hand motion. The council member policy and the city policy. But I'm sorry. Do you go to the floor? I appreciate you yielding. So, yeah. To me, those are two separate.
Okay.
To be handled. To my opinion.
Okay, Councilmember Ketovic.
Thank you. And thank you for putting this on the agenda. It was, you know, at my request, so I do appreciate it. I've been kind of researching in this, and I want to thank Councilman Gearing for handing out the Seattle legislative policy and the Cheney one. I had looked at the Seattle one at length. So I tried to look at this topic from a couple different angles. One, looking at it from open government, transparency, communication with constituents, because let's face it, over 1 billion people are on Facebook alone. So it can be used as a really effective tool to engage with your constituents. And one of the things I promised when I was running was really to be out there, try to connect as much as possible with people, find out what people were thinking, get their input, get their ideas. And I really take that role seriously. And then there's the other perspective, which is just as important, if not more important, to council members and to the city, is to make sure that we are, you know, being aware and strategic of the pitfalls and the dangers, because there are some. A couple areas when I looked at, we really need to make sure with our policy that we're following the ethics. And I'll share some information that I received from the city of Seattle. But when it applies to ethics, it's really that you're not using your social media to endorse candidates and to do campaign policy stuff that you shouldn't be doing. So I have an advisory opinion on that. Then also there's the records retention, that you really need to be following that policy on how long you retain records and really working with the city on that, which is very important. Then there's the third issue of the Open Public Meeting Act. You need to make sure, and they give advice, that council members shouldn't friend each other, that you can't have a string of communication. I think, you know, being very aware of that and staying away from that is very important. And then the fourth aspect is the public records compliance, which we all know is probably one area that, you know, I know that I'm concerned about, want to work with the city and make sure that we are meeting that requirement, because we have to meet that requirement. So I really looked at it from both of those positions. And, you know, it's my hope that this is the initial discussion. You know, I knew that there was no way we were going to come up with a policy tonight. I wouldn't expect that. But I wanted to have initial discussion and kind of set out a roadmap, and maybe that is to find more information and to really try to come up with a recommendation of policy that meets the needs of what is going on in our society today, which is people are using this tool to communicate. And it can be an effective tool for communication, and then making sure we have guidelines and policies in place where we are meeting the needs of the city. And in a lot of the guidelines that I saw, it really is put back on the council member to make sure they are compliant with the public records request. There's ways that you can change it into a PDFA and immediately email it to the city so they have that record. There's lots of different things we can look at. As far as when I contacted the city of Seattle, they have some of their city staff be the administrator, so they have access. They actually provide their council members, and I'll just pass this around to you guys, with different pictures of the city that you can choose from to construct your own Facebook page. And they have guidelines around this. So, you know, your city council's Facebook page would say the venture starts here, or maybe they have pictures of Lake Tai. And so it has a look and the feel of the city, but it's has a council member's own stamp on it. So I'll just kind of look back, pass it around. And I wanted to pass around the advisory opinion that the Ethics Commission from City of Seattle put out. That was just to pass around, then we can give it to the media again. Sure. If you can just pass those around. I want to read a couple highlights, because I think while people are nervous of this and they're worried about it, there are some really good reasons to go forward in this. And I'm just going to read a couple out of this. And they really talk of it from the ethical point of view, or the ethics point of view. But, you know, they also point out the pitfalls and dangers. And I'll just kind of... You guys can look at this on your own, but I'm just going to read a couple of sentences and phrases that stuck out to me in this advisory opinion.
Can you give us the page again?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just on page one. I'm just going to kind of go through it. But so, you know, they talk about that using Facebook or social media, the conversion of formerly private speech into public speech has two crucial side effects, because all of a sudden... You know, it's a conversation with a person, but it's for all to see. It makes the process of governing more transparent for all, and it converts these private communications into mass communications. So that's a real plus. The downfall is making them more susceptible to misuse by elected officials seeking voter approval of ballot box. So that's something to be really aware of, that there's an ethical consideration when we take this on, or if we take it on. On page... you guys can read through this. It really talks about what not to do, but I'm going to highlight just on their conclusion. It's on the last page, page 6. In conclusion, they say, like our counterparts at the state and federal level, the commission is concerned that overregulating these new means of communication could do more harm than good. For that reason, the commission's guidance is intended to provide officials with as much leeway as possible in their use of public media. So while... it does have dangers and pitfalls, I think this is an issue that we should look at and definitely study. I looked at the legislative department policy of the City of Seattle, and Councilman Geary gave everybody a copy of that last week. Thank you. And it's also in your packet. You know, on page one, it talks right in the beginning, and this is the legislative department policy, and it's the City of Seattle. You have it on your... agenda, thanks. But it says the legislative department is committed to open and progressive communications between elected officials and constituents within the limits of the law. To the extent possible, all forms of communication will be embraced and online technologies are eligible for consideration. So I guess as we move forward, and then they, you know, I hope that we would kind of keep that spirit in mind, that this is not a negative, that there are some pitfalls and dangers, but there's some real advantages to doing it. And then this policy goes on and talks about the ethics compliance, the Retention Act, you know, the Public Records Act, and also the Open Public Meeting Acts, all things I think that our policy should consider when we talk about this. I did get an email from the Seattle communications person, who is a communications person for the council members, and I just asked her some general, you know, questions, because I was just trying to gather more information on kind of how they do this with their council members, and they really try to provide guidance and help for their council members to use this tool if they want. Like I said, they help construct kind of a look of it. They encourage discourse. They encourage the back and forth. They think that's important in order for it not to appear like a newsletter or a website, which might have just one point of view and kind of almost like a sales pitch in a way to say, look, what we're doing, this is great, which is important, and it's important to have that kind of communication. But social media is a different form of communication, where actually the back and forth is kind of like a public square back in the day before we had all this, where debate happened, and as long as it was respectful and not obscene and handled in a, you know, professional manner, that a debate was actually encouraged. This is a way where people can debate topics and issues that are important to our city without having to leave their home, which makes it easier then for people to engage. So I guess I don't see any other light, so I'm just going to put it out there that, I mean, just I was going to put out what I would like from this conversation, unless people have more discussion, which I would love to hear, but I would like to make a proposal, but I don't want to squash the discussion.
We do have another line, Councilmember.
Thanks.
Being as it is late, I would definitely like to talk about this and think about it more at another study session, when we all can be a little more alert. But I think this is really good to know. My concerns with the whole issue, one being, as far as the public records, I'm not sure how it can be done, but it's when you post something, when I post something on Facebook and then I delete it, I'm not sure how Facebook or anyone can pull up what was deleted. This is a question, you know, that we have to address, because this sounds great about city was the administrator, you know, we talked about that, and so we had the city thing and all that. But if I delete something and it's gone, then we have to be able to somehow prove that. And so that's the one question. And as far as my opinion, frankly, I think this is all great to be out there and spread the word. Personally, I don't have any interest in posting something and then hitting some button to send it to the printer, to the city. Oh, by the way, I just posted something for the Public Records Act, whatever. So you're asking for input from people.
Sure.
That's my personal opinion. I have my personal Facebook. I'm friends with most of you on personal Facebook. And I never comment about city things, ever. And I keep it all friendly and about families and things like that. And I leave the city stuff to hear, phone calls, things like that. So
you've got a comment on that? Sure. That is the exact distinction that I'm talking about, that needs to be in our policy. And more of the how we do this, and you're talking about some great things.
Yeah.
As I'm thinking about it more kind of at the higher level,
sure.
I'm down in the weeds of if you're going to represent yourself as an elected official, one, it needs to be separate. In so much as you need to use your city email address to set up that Facebook account, because then every notification you get comes to the city, and it would be an email, you know, a policy of when you set this up, you set notifications to on. So then, you know, it takes care of some of those public records request things.
That's
so
true.
I'm thinking a lot about. I'm more in the how. You're up there, and I appreciate that. I'm in the how you do it. Mm-hmm. You want a Facebook page where you represent yourself as a city, as an elected official at whatever level. The disclosure. What if people are sending you messages that, you know, as we discussed last fall, aren't visible to the public? And in my opinion, that presents a risk.
Sure.
If it's set up with a city email address already, if that's how you created the account in the first place, you're going to get that on the city system, and then it's disclosable. So anyway, I'd love to talk. I'm in the how, and so
that's a great,
and that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. That's, you know, you take the genie, you know, not discouraging doing it, taking the genie, and then including some of those Monroe twists that I was talking about, some of the things that are that we're talking about. You set it up. This is the way you set it up. When you get a message that doesn't post, you know, there is specific functionality on your messages where you just forward it to your city email account. Then it becomes fully, then it's disclosable. You don't have to worry about it. somebody requests it, then whoever is doing the public records request can get it. We can get into that in the future. Those are the kind of things. Mm-hmm. That's the level at which I think we're going to need to get to that level.
Definitely.
If we're going to make this work.
Sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, like I said, I didn't have no idea if you can how you can do all that. So if you can do all that,
really.
And if one of you guys wants to do this and have it all go to the city email so everything's disclosed, I'm good with that. I'm just saying my personal opinion. I'm not going to do that. And so, but if one of you wants to do it. And we follow the guidelines that we set up and everything. I think it's great.
All right, very good. Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. I would like to see whether this is a legislative committee or this is a separate council committee that we appoint to look at some policies and bring back a recommendation, as opposed to debate things that,
Sure.
We have varying degrees of knowledge on this topic. So that would be my preference. And then another thing that personally I don't like to see the city of Monroe trailblazing the way into new legislation. So if there's policies already out there, I would much rather adopt an existing policy than to come up with our own. And I would also caution us against, while I appreciate your comments about the city of Seattle, and looking at some of these cities, and I'm thinking they have public information officers and they have a department to do this. So I would caution us to look at cities similar in infrastructure size as us before we go out and adopt some of these other things, because I don't know that we have the staff resources to manage like that.
The Cheney policy basically comes from the Seattle policy. If you look at them, they're almost exact. I mean, I put them side by side and kind of look through both of them, and really, so Seattle doesn't do anything. If you look at the legislative policy, and people have time to look at that, it is very close. I mean, it's like the Cheney one. So
yeah, and so again, my recommendation is, if this isn't something that the legislative committee can do, I would like to see us maybe appoint a separate committee of three that want to do work on this together and come back with a recommendation.
I think it would be appropriate for the legislative committee, because I mean, we're talking about policy here for both city that for the city. However, I think that to your point, my concern has never been with. I totally and completely appreciate all the comments made with regards to communicating to our constituents. And my concern really isn't with any of the policies that I saw. My concern is, how do we manage that information? And quite frankly, I don't think that it's manageable at this point, given the number of public records requests that we receive on a weekly basis as it is. This is something that to me is 75% of the weighting in terms of making the decision to move forward with this, how we manage this, the public records that will be created through these types of posts.
I share that concern as well, and I think having the committee come back with some recommendations. Mm-hmm. We'll go much further than us doing that here.
Councilmember Campbell.
Right. I'm sorry, I have to agree with the gentleman that is having the committee look at it makes much more sense than having all of us up here debating the issue. If it goes to the legislative committee, that's fine.
We obviously have
more on a new committee to handle this particular item, because it is so big and so impacted. My major concern is still the exposure of the city to the risk. This would be a great tool for communication. It's a great tool personally for communication for family issues. If we can find a way, or again, find a way at our level to manage this without undue risk to the city, I think it'll be great. And I look forward to whichever committee decides to get this.
Well, that's up to you. With their permission. That's up to you. Recommendation by Councilmember Williams has been the legislative committee. I think that's appropriate. Okay. It it's up to council to say.
My recommendation isn't the legislative. It's either the legislative or a committee of people that are passionate about this topic.
The question was, would it be appropriate for the legislative committee? And I think it would be some. So leave that to council to direct that committee to look into this if you should choose. And again, you know, the long and short of it is, for me, is the risk involved in maintaining the records associated. I read through every document. In fact, some of these documents I had asked to be placed on here, including the one from Wisconsin. And not only, because that came from Municipal research. That was on their website. That's why it was included. I didn't go to Wisconsin to get their input. But in reading all of the documents, or most of the documents completely, I couldn't find anywhere that laid out the public records retention program that satisfied my concerns with our risks involved in just one, you know, post or one email disappearing and somebody, you know, suing the city over that one. If that to me, I think again weighs, you know, three times as much as the policy issue at hand weighs in answering whether or not we move forward with social media as a elected bodies. Councilmember Cadaback.
Thank you. Thank you for all your comments. Gene, I had a question. I know we posted the city clerk position. Mm-hmm. Yes, and do you have a timeline on that? And I'll tell you why I asked that question.
We do. We've changed the position to part-time. I think many of the council know that we had done that. Budget concerns and the like. And so it's more of a records management position, still under the city clerk pretense. But point being is that we did hold interviews. We've had two rounds of interviews, and we've actually extended an offer.
Okay.
And that person needs to notify their employer. And so we're probably 3 weeks or a month out.
Great. And what my proposal was going to be after I heard everybody's comment really was to possibly look at forming an ad hoc committee, kind of a task force, separate from what we've already got. I know a lot of committees already have a lot on their plate. I know we did, the city did this when they were looking at the Y as a contract. Two or three council members sat on it, people from the Y, city staff and outside sources kind of sat on that and gathered information and actually met over like a 6 to 8 month period and really looked at it and looked at what was feasible. So it was a long-term kind of process, but I think it really fleshed out all the concerns and answered a lot of questions. My hope is that we could do something similar with this, and I would be willing to, you know, take the lead or sit on this committee and any other council members, one or two, and then look at if we could get a social media expert. You know, I would look at recruiting with Gene's help, hopefully with the city's help, and kind of looking at who could really look at this and really give an in-depth kind of response, because I think there's pitfalls, definitely. I think there's pros. So I think I would be responsible in bringing both sides forward and not just, you know, putting it out that we have to do this. I really want to take a look at this and understand the whole aspect of it. And I agree that logistics need to be managed. And I think in talking with Seattle, they do have a records retention thing. They have a list of exactly, you know, kind of how to go about doing it. And so I would look at getting that from them and moving forward. But maybe having an IT person, having, you know, somebody social media savvy who really does that, a couple council members, and kind of meeting over at least the next 3 to 4 months and researching on this and bringing a recommendation back to council. So that was my hope, and that is what I'd like to propose to council.
Councilmember Ewing.
With all due respect, I think that seems like a little much for the topic. At least hearing it for the first time, I think I would certainly hope to do something a little sooner, maybe than 3 months.
Sure.
Or the 4 month process. I think for a city policy, it needs to be just city people related to council first if we want to expand it after that. But I think at first pass, I think you know, a committee of council members should be the first ones doing it. If we want to, I don't know what a social media expert is going to help us do. We have, you know, we have groundwork already that I think we should go off of. And then once we come up with something, maybe bounce it off somebody like that. But I think it needs to be in-house. It needs to be council, if not one of the existing committees, then an ad hoc one that we come up with. But, I mean, overall good. This seems like a little much just for the beginning. Let's kick it around. But I think, actually not kicking around, let's do something about it. We have, you know, a busy season coming up with elections and stuff as well. It'd be nice to have something in place before that happens. We need to kind of keep, you know, there's going to be a section of this that probably needs to contain the separation, you know, with regard to, you know, the ethics that you talked about.
Sure.
of campaign related.
Definitely.
Versus personal campaign, and then representing yourself as a one who represents themselves as an elected official. So my preference would be to have a council members first, expand if we feel like we need to, but let's kick it around ourselves first before we take off. It's my initial response. Thank you.
We're just checking. We don't know that the council rules allow for ad hoc committees by council members.
I saw in there that they could do other committees as needed. You're shaking your head. Yeah.
They are? Okay. We were wanting to answer that question.
Not to interrupt, but there was that precedent that was set for kind of outside looking at, you know, for example, the Y. That's been my experience, was council created that committee ad hoc, look at this issue, gather people from the community who also had resources and go on. So
yeah, I was on that.
Yeah. There you go.
Councilmember Hamper.
Yeah, so we're not looking to take action tonight. Is that correct?
No.
We can't vote on anything anyway.
That's a study session.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. It's just that.
So I'd like to propose we hear from Councilman Davis, since everyone else seems to have spoken their mind. And then after that, I would suggest that the next study session or the next council meeting, we can propose to take action and vote on committees, or, you know, and hash it out at that point where we can actually take some action and make some decisions.
So the question is whether to use the existing committee, the legislative committee, or create an ad hoc committee, which the council rules we define does not permit the council from creating.
Does not prohibit?
It does not prohibit.
Okay.
Prohibit.
So I want to make sure I
create
that.
But to your point, you sound tired. So,
well, I think I'd like to hear him. Yeah. And I'd say, let's move on.
Then
we can actually take some action.
Yeah, and I didn't know if we needed action or consensus, so that was my question.
Might also just give us a week to think about
what
we want to do.
Yeah.
Council members mull it over, and Councilmember Gamble can have a chance to weigh in as well. Councilmember Davis, you have anything to add?
Sure. I just off the top of my head, I'd like to see the legislative committee take a look at it and do it with in-house before we look at any kind of ad hoc type committee, and then go from there.
Give me a push on
people. Yeah. That's a good place to start. Make sure you're
involved. Okay, well, thank you for that. I appreciate it. Okay, so if we will, let's put this on for discussion next week. Come back. Although the legislative committee is meeting next week,
right. So we can start there, and then we can discuss it.
If you like, you're already discussing the rules.
Probably just kind of dovetails anyway.
Yeah. Which makes a lot of sense if you're already discussing the rules and. I mean, the policies and the rules for the city council, this might be one thing just to add on to that discussion. But um,
I'll leave that up to council to discuss for themselves. Okay, then I just want to draw attention to the department reports hope the council's had a chance to review those. I know we had some computer problems today, but those are still there. And we'll take a look at the draft agenda for next week.
Good enough.
And we'll get home.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, sir.
I'd like to make a motion to extend the meeting past 10 o'clock.
Second.
Okay. Motion's been made by Councilmember Camp and seconded by Councilmember Hamford to extend the meeting past 10 p.m. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
I was speaking for Councilmember Gale there. Councilmember Gearing was opposed. Others were. Okay, we're fine. Thank you. City Administrator Brazel.
Okay. On the department reports, I noticed there's a picture of the Providence building in there. Our building official came and talked to me last week and wanted to let me know that the general selling construction came up to him and said it has been an absolute pleasure working in Monroe, that he just came off the Providence job in Everett and it was a nightmare working with the city. So he has just had a great time working here. So I wanted council to know that I passed that word on for him. Council agenda, draft agenda for February 19th, 2013. We have a consent agenda. Under new business, we have non-represented employee salary review. This is something that council's talked about periodically. We've dealt with the represented folks throughout the city and handled that. So, and this has been talked about at the committee level. Number two, presentation of hearing examiner's recommendation and set a date to consider the Egomont preliminary plat. I believe we have number three on there for social media placeholder. And the draft agenda for February 26, 2013. And we do have an executive session scheduled for pertaining to review of an employment contract. Additions or deletions?
Councilor Williams?
I was just going to ask if you were going to ask for councilman reports before we adjourn.
I didn't read it on here, so I was not going to.
You normally do.
I know.
But yeah. I don't have a question about the agenda. I have a different
okay.
I do have one, and I can't remember what it was about the agenda. So.
Well, we can go around it. If council has anything else to report this evening, Councilmember Williams.
Yeah, I want to comment on the utility bill letter. I think that's a great tool.
Awesome.
And I've actually had people comment to me that have read it. My only complaint is we wasted the back page of it by not putting anything on it. And so I would like to suggest that we do that maybe every month and that we fill both pages of it, whether it's to announce upcoming events or one thing is you get that in your utility bill, which mine is now like $35 higher than it used to be. So it'd be nice to have maybe one page dedicated to why your utility bill went up and show maybe some pictures of a
toilet,
of the wastewater treatment plant, yeah. And talk about the expansion, just to give people an idea of what we're doing. But I think the page with your message on is important, and I think that I'm glad we're doing it now. I wish we would have done it a lot sooner. I think it's super important, and I'd like to see that every month.
Second.
Thank you. And I think that there are some months, because we're limited on pages, and so this month we could have done double sided, we didn't. I think there are some months that we've already booked out so that we don't go over costs, that we'll only be able to do front page. But any month that we are able to do both sides, we'll take your recommendation and your advisement and make sure that we fill it up with all sorts of good stuff.
In an effort to be green.
That's right.
That's the real reason.
Yes. And I also want to remind that, you know, I have that area, or excuse me, we have that area, I don't need to use one, it's been drafted, we have the area that we have council members' information on there. But as I've shared in the past, you know, if council has a report or something that they would like to communicate to the city, then, you know, please send that. I think the only difference is that we need to get some consensus from council as a whole as to this being a council message. So.
Yeah, and I just thought it was ironic that our website is great and it's been updated, but I haven't had nobody comment on getting information from the website, but I've had people come up to me and talk about stuff that was in that letter. So yeah. It's a great tool. We should
grab it. Absolutely.
Okay. All right, well, I don't want to leave our student representative in the audience tonight without having any opportunity to share. So, Brandon, anything? What's the word on the painting?
I'm yet to hear back from the faculty or the maintenance director, machine room, yet. So, but I expect to hear back in the next week or so. So, we'll see.
Okay. Yeah, this is not directly due. No, I'm not. Councilmember Gearing.
Well, okay. Well, you didn't say anything. I was going to say something.
I could, but I
taking a little long. February 26th. Are we going to have a meeting that night? Looks like there was at least a potential for. Did you have a tentative item listed? Just for the potential. So next week we might decide to consider it on the 26th. Is that kind of what that is?
We are going to need it. It's to keep a plat moving. We've been working with the developer, and this is part of the timeline, so we've opted to have that meeting. I didn't feel it was prudent for us not to have the meeting and hold a development for moving forward.
Oh, sure. Sure. No, absolutely. Okay, great. I appreciate that. Thank you. That's
it. Okay. Anything else? No, we're good. All right, then the meeting stands, or is adjourned.